All please rise. Call meeting order, and we'll start the meeting with leading of the Pledge of Allegiance by one of our championship baseball players.
All right. I pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty, justice for all.
Councilmember Watson.
Present.
Councilmember Hansen.
Here.
Councilmember Olson.
Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Here.
Councilmember Mutzler.
Here.
Councilmember Zimmerman.
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Here. Perfect attendance. Thank you, Council. Okay, next up is the public comment period. This is the period where anyone can come and address the Council on anything that's not on tonight's agenda. We have a really busy agenda, so I'm going to hold to the 3 minutes exactly. Our clerk will time you, and it'll be violent if you go over 3 minutes. So reflect on that. So anyone who'd like to address the Council on anything that is not on tonight's agenda? Nope. John, looks like you're on. 3 minutes, John. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm still John Robinson, a.k.a. Papa John, and I'm here addressing the same issue I've addressed in times past and will continue doing so. It is a public safety issue, and I remind all of us that that's a number one responsibility of any public group, whether it's city, county, state, or nation. And so I came here tonight to challenge all of you. If you consider yourself able-bodied, because I'm 70, and I can walk all over this town, and if you see me, you see me every day walking. I do it to exercise both my legs and my mouth. I have the toughest jaws in town. But the point is that I challenge you to park your cars downtown and walk from not closer than first, and that's kind of cheating, maybe third, down to and across underneath the overpass, the railroad overpass, and down to Walgreens, and then walk back on the south side, paying close attention to all traffic, because I guarantee you, you do jeopardize yourself when you do that. Like even if people's, many times I started walking, have people cut right in front of me, going into that lot there for Walgreens or People's or back the back way over to Pagans. Then I challenge you as a subsequent to that, or maybe in front of it, to go to the east side of the Higgins lot, walk from there across however you choose to go, down past the cross cutter where help me out here, somebody, the credit union, I forgot the name of it. What is it?
Les Schwab.
Yeah, in the Les Schwab area. And you'll notice that they're missing crosswalks in more than one place. And people will walk from the east lot in Higgins to the bus stop. They need to walk from the cost cutter area across the street, perhaps to the Ferndale Family Clinic, and there's no crosswalk. And so the point is, to me, it's an urgent, and I feel very urgent, public safety issue that we need for the good of our community, and I do feel like I'm a citizen of Ferndale. For the good of our community, we need to encourage safe walking or bicycling, or whatever it is when it comes to using our sidewalks. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Anyone else for the public comment period? Okay, seeing none. So sometimes mayors get to do fun things, so this is a mayor proclamation that I enjoy reading. City of Ferndale, mayor proclamation, whereas the Ferndale U-10 boys baseball team had an amazing season with a record of 42-15-1 overall, and whereas the team won the Cal Ripken 10-and-under North Washington State Championship by going 6-0 and outscoring opponents 63-10 in the tournament held in Moses Lake, Washington between July 4th and 7th, and whereas the team represented North Washington in the Northwest Regional Tournament held in Helena, Montana between July 25th and 27th. Now, therefore, I, Gary Jensen, Mayor of the City of Ferndale, do hereby recognize the Ferndale 10 under boys baseball members for their accomplishments and for representing our community so well in both in and outside our state. Players Aiden Roddle, number 11, so you can stand up when I say your name so we know who you are. Aiden Peterson, number 5. Andrew James, number 9. Bodie Human, number 8. Carson Peters, number 35. Damian Garza, number 7. Evan Rayberger, number 3. Kobe Sandstrom, number 34. Has a heck of a voice. Kyler Fleming, number 12. Well, good for him. Landon Hanson, number 1. Ryan Pelton, number 10. Shea Jeffrey, number 2. And the manager, Hank Swartz, standing up. Good job, Hank. Clapping, so we're not done clapping yet. Assistant coach is John Sandstrom. Andy Pelton. Okay. Austin Neer. Okay, now we're going to clap for the whole team. Well done. So we'll see you back here next year.
Hey, Mayor,
okay, I like it.
Mayor, can you let their parents take a picture with you and them holding the...
Get up there,
just
oh,
real
sure.
quick,
okay.
So the parents can get a picture.
Well, come this way. We'll face the crowd. Crowd around. Hey, this is a new
year. I'll stay back.
There's no
sir.
But they all have more hair than David.
You're supposed to laugh. You can pin each of them.
Four guys.
Mayor, on behalf of the Tempe baseball team, we just want to say thank you all for recognizing us. It was a fantastic season. You always deserve the proclamation, but thank you very much. And like you said, hopefully we can get a little bit further down the road next season.
You're very welcome.
You're very
we'll
welcome.
See you next year. Okay, you
guys. Congratulations.
Yep.
Did we do consent agenda yet?
No.
Okay.
We're doing consent after that.
Okay.
I wanted to get it out of the way quick.
Yep.
Okay, do you want to talk about primrose? We'll give it a couple of seconds.
Yeah, we're going to wait for him to...
Are you going to take us down the primrose trail?
Okay, next on the agenda, before we get to the consent agenda, I want to get the crowd a chance to get home early. We'll talk about one of our first and great volunteer efforts, Primrose Trail. So I'll go to our community development director.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. On Earth Day of this year, we held a volunteer project to create a trail. As you know, just before that, the council had adopted a new Parks, Recreation, and Trails master plan that emphasized connectivity of trails throughout the city of Ferndale. Primrose was our first, and we had a lot of great assistance from the community and through partnering agencies and some of our local developers. So we start off... For those that aren't familiar, we have Mountain View over in the background, Mountain View Elementary School to the west. This is taken from Lego Avenue, so we're looking west there before the trail. As I said, it is intended to increase our connectivity throughout the city, and every little part does help that connectivity overall. We had about 35 to 40 volunteers on that Saturday. It was a rainy day. We had kids of all ages from 3 years old all the way up to probably around 70 years old or so. We also had a great assistance again from Dave Turner, who's one of our local developers. He's also on our planning commission, who operated the little mini excavator there. And now, and I don't know how to get rid of that, but there it is for you. Now we have a completed trail that takes us all the way from Lego to Mountain View School. And as you would be able to see, if I could figure it out, we actually have people using it. So it's a great new trail. We're very proud of it. This would have cost the city approximately $35,000 had we need to acquire the land, pay for supplies, and pay for labor. Thank you, City Clerk Sam Taylor. But we were able to get it all done for less than $5,000. So... With that, I know that we have some of the folks here who participated. And I think that the mayor was, did you want him just to stand up and come forward to be recognized?
Well, I'll have them, I'll read names, and if they're here, they can stand up. We'll get a certificate for them. But first, I want to kind of brag on Yori, because this was Yori's idea. And some of you public have heard this before, but it bears repeating, is that Yori's concept was, is when someone builds a home in Ferndale, they're charged a park mitigation fee for every residence. And Yori came up with the idea of you could get credit for that park mitigation fee by using machines and using your own labor to help us build trails. And so it basically lowers the cost of the house, the worker feels better about it. We hope to continue this. We have some developers excited about this program, and it's just a great move for Ferndale. So I hope to see more of this. Now, here's my plug. All you Primrose Trail people, so on September 14th, there's a corner of Vandegrift Park that's always been covered with woods by Bass Street, and it's been owned by a private citizen. We've tried for several years. I wrote letters every year to the person and say, you can't build on the lot. Why don't you donate it to the city of Ferndale? So that person has donated that lot to the city of Ferndale, so we get a chance to expand our park. So on September 14th, 9 a.m. to 12, we'll have a work party and clear all the blackberries, clear some of the trees, more room to watch our river. So September 14th, you've all done a good job, so you can continue that effort. There's probably a scout badge in there somewhere. So I'd like you to stand up, and then Yori will find you with your certificate. Mr. Clyde Watkins, a member of our Parks Board. Hold your applause till later. John Freeberg, who donated some piping for us. Dave Turner, I don't think Dave's here. Bill Kramer, another developer that donated. Eli Burnett. Oh, there he is. Lorelei Burnett. Nicole Burnett.
And they are my family.
We're glad you established that.
It's only training for life.
Connie Moore. Kathy Harrison. Paul Ingram, you can deliver this one.
Pass it over.
Barbara Ingram.
We'll go quick. Give you to Paul and Barbara.
John Mutchler.
I'll do John.
Dirk Patton.
John.
Yes? Katie Patton.
Hi, Katie.
Mike Patton.
You want to take?
Ah, here we go. Justin Oss. Am I saying that right? Ossie? Justin Ossie? Elijah Ossie? See, we like the family stick together. Jeanette Clark? Travis White? Kyle Deming?
You could probably give this to someone that could get that.
Rebecca Czar? Member of Planning Commission, thank you. Gloria Virgo? Virgo. Haley Nordhaus? I don't think I've seen her in Nordhaus this year.
I don't see her.
Josh Nordhaus? Donovan Ritchie? Thomas Wagner?
Is the other one here right now? This is great.
Ashlyn Nordhaus?
Nordhaus family is good.
Shane Forneston? Perfect.
Very impressive.
Way to go, Shane. We had a great representation from our council, Lloyd Zimmerman.
Thank you.
Eleanor King, a past member of our Parks Board. Hunter Sharp. Hunter? No?
There he is.
Ah, way to go. Good job, Hunter. Rebecca Sharp. Rob Nordhaus, the leader of the whole Nordhaus plan, Ferndale School District. Jack Mutchler, we probably know who we could give that to.
Oh, he's back there.
He's back there.
Oh, he is. Jack, yeah, bring him up. Your dad wants the photo op.
Yeah, I want the photo op of the mayor. I guess they can work.
We'll pull some executive privilege on that.
Exactly, I think so.
Like that guy for us.
Just like that.
Roland Lanos, who donates some engineering, and Red Watkins. Okay, there you go. Hey, thank you all. Thank you very much. And remember, September 14th, 9 a.m., Vandy Up Park. Okay, I'll let scouts kind of, we'll give a tiny little break here so scouts can go home and do more important things.
Your last week of 3 months. School starting? 2 weeks.
Okay, council, I have entertained a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded by Councilperson Hansen. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Okay, capital project updates. Katie? Welcome.
Hello. Good evening, Council. Mr. Mayor. So we'll start with Thornton first because it's the easiest one to talk about. It's pretty much complete. There's some little minor items that need to be done, some hydro seating, signs, mailboxes, that sort of thing. If you've driven up that way, the road's completely paved. It's striped. There's some barricades kind of keeping people out of there until tomorrow when they can open it by the end of the day. So you get a little sneak preview of opening. It will be sometime after 4 o'clock, probably tomorrow. I'm sure Sam will send out a press release. We're still working on ribbon cuttings. So we'll schedule those for probably later. So I don't know if anybody has any questions about that.
Any questions for this project?
No.
Nope.
Well ahead of the September 4th profit business. Okay, the next would be the Vista Drive improvements, and today they are doing some waterline work there at the intersection of Washington and Vista. Our guys are now just bringing the water back up. We replaced a pretty good sized cross and valve system there, so that work will be done today. They'll have some sanitary sewer to do and some water services to complete next. Let's see. They're working on getting their curb and sidewalk grade in. They'll be digging up some of the soft spots between 4th and the roundabout to do pavement repair in preparation for paving, which we would expect to happen the latter part of this week, probably Thursday, Friday. The contractor did actually work not this last Saturday, but the Saturday before, and I've never, it's pretty close to when they worked the Saturday on Main Street, but there were 4 crews working the distance between 4th and Vista, or 4th and the roundabout, and they got quite a bit of work done, so that actually caught us up probably a couple days on the schedule. We're still pushing pretty hard for this project to be done. The road will be open prior to school starting. There might be some minor items, raising iron, striping, landscape restoration, and that sort of thing. So, like I said, they'll be doing some paving later this week. Probably the overlay will happen the first part of this week.
Any questions on that project from council? Councilperson Goodrich?
You're talking the paving from 2nd all the way up to the roundabout starting next week, or
later this week. What they're going to do is a pre-level. They're going to pave in the pavement repair sections where they're going to take out all the asphalt and put new gravel in and that sort of thing, patch that all back. And then the first thing they'll do is, because we're trying to utilize the existing curb and gutter, they'll do a pre-level because, you know, you've got your road section and it's not really even now. So what they do is the pavement layer isn't a consistent depth, so what they do is they set the pavement so it's a consistent plane, so it might be no asphalt out here, but it might be 2 inches thick in the crown. And then next week, that's correct, what they'll do is they'll start here probably at 2nd and work their way up. It'll take them probably 3 days to get all that paving done.
I had a couple residents that were hoping to be here tonight that weren't. About Siddle and access in and out, because the only way in and out was Vista, that there was some issues or something. I don't know the full extent of it. but something that we may think of in future things where we have a dead-end street that comes into our projects, you know, how people get in and out of that. So,
I'd be interested to talk to them because at no time did we block.
They were hoping to be here tonight, but I don't see them. So.
Yeah. At no time did we block Siddle. There were times where just because of the skewed intersection at Washington Street, there was no way to cordon that off in blocks. And just the way the street system here in Ferndale is set up, there's no good detour route.
Yeah.
So when they got between, we call it the Eastern Washington, sounds like it's Eastern Mountains, but the eastern leg of Washington Street, from that closure there, it's been flagged through. And I know it's been kind of tricky, and folks have found a way to kind of get around the area and avoid it. But I know that there might have been some ways that some people might have thought that it was too long.
So September 6th, Friday night. First home football game versus Blaine, so projected big crowd.
I hope they have fun on the new street.
Okay. Here.
Good answer.
Good answer. Thank you.
No playing in the street. I'm not happy. And then just a quick update on, the Guinevere sewer project. That sewer was installed. The old sewer line was replaced. They are just now finishing up with the water line work, so we're pretty much complete on that project as well.
Any questions for Katie? Councilperson Ingram?
Katie, just one quick question. The flaggers, are those hired by the contractor, or is that a separate company? Or?
It depends on, it depends each firm. They either have their own flaggers or they'll hire a subcontractor. So I don't know if you're talking specifically about the contractor now.
I don't know who they were. They've been great. They've been phenomenal.
They have a hard job.
They have a tough job, and they have been absolutely terrific.
Thank
so
you.
So you can pass that on.
I will.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Okay. Any more questions for Capital Projects? Okay, we'll move on to the Capital Project that Yori's going to talk about, the BMX bike park. Yori?
Council Member Ingram, I have another question for you.
Ooh. Is that the BMX park?
Well, that's not the BMX park. This is. Sorry.
I'm going to give a little bit of an update, and I know that council wanted to discuss this. Some months ago, I think it was a couple of months ago, the city council authorized city staff to proceed with the permitting for a BMX park just north of the ConocoPhillips ball fields. A SEPA environmental review was initiated. It was completed following a comment period. A land disturbance permit was issued and work commenced. Following that, City Council brought to our attention that there was apparent miscommunication between City Council and staff, and we wanted to update you as to what is occurring on the site and then be able to respond to any questions you might have. So, and hopefully folks behind me can see, the BMX park prior to construction, prior to development, this is taken from the main parking lot north of ConocoPhillips, looking to the northeast. And for those of you that are familiar, there used to be fairly extensive blackberry bushes there over the entirety of the site. And I'm going to have a site plan that shows it a little bit better for you. Those blackberries were kind of the remnants of the ConocoPhillips construction, where there was also miscellaneous debris, kind of spoils from the site when we cleared it and graded it a few years back. Here we have it to give you some visual context. Down at the bottom, and I really apologize. Let's see if I can bring this forward. Sorry if I'm blinding anybody. There we go. That's probably too good. Just north of the parking lot, we have the site. Here's the American Legion. Here's Second Avenue. Here's neighbors to the north, and here's the reserve parking there. here, incidentally, is the city of Ferndale city limits right there. This is the site plan that was approved where, again, you have the property right here. We identified a wetland to the north of it. Again, I'm going to go back just a bit for you. Yes, sir. This is the existing city limits boundary. This is the unincorporated urban growth area right there. There are some wetlands that extend up and are part of the Shell Marsh system. And there is a wetland to the northwest of the site, which requires a buffer where there would be no work in there. Although we did not get SEPA comments, we were aware of possible concerns from neighbors to the northeast. So we have established or required that there be established a berm here where you have fill material that's raised up above the rest of the park, and that there would be plantings placed on top of that in order to create a vegetative buffer. Moving on, this is the present condition where it's looking again to the northeast. Here's the American Legion. Here's about where that wetland would be. Patrick Dahl, who is here, who's the main proponent, has been able to benefit from all of the construction going on in Ferndale and has been able to obtain some good quality dirt for this fill. Moving on just a little bit. I know that one of the main concerns is just how close the park is to the adjacent property to the northeast. So this is from the American Legion Hall looking to the west, where here you have the property owner's fencing here. And then you have, these are about 8 feet wide. You have about 16 to 20 feet of undisturbed blackberry bushes before you get to that vegetative berm, which would again be here. It would be planted and there would be trees on the top of it. And then one last, to give you an idea, a couple of shots, just miscellaneous shots of the facility. This is taken about midway, looking over to the northeast. And this is a conceptual drawing of it, where here is about where the wetland is. This is north over here. Here would be the property owner over here, where you have jumps, and then you do not have anything here. That's to make sure that there are no jumps in that northeastern part, so they are as low as they can be when they're immediately adjacent to that neighbor. So in sum, the staff believes that while we did not come back and update the council, and we do apologize for that, there was miscommunication, we feel that the appropriate mitigation has been put in place and identified, that the proper notification was given, and that the proponent is moving forward and is coordinating very well with city staff. So I'm happy to try to answer any questions that you may have.
And, Council, we do have some members of the audience, I think, that would like to speak, and so I think that's appropriate. The citizens always should get a chance to speak. So we'll go to Council comments, and then I would reserve some time to allow the public to speak, too. So first hand up with Councilperson Watson.
I guess one question. So our stormwater engineer has also signed off on this plan?
Correct.
My concern was all the dirt and where is the runoff going to go in the wintertime. And so.
That's why we asked for the vegetated buffer along, I think, the east side, and that addressed it.
So will the city be putting the plants on top of the buffer? Is that our responsibility to put plants on the buffer? Or?
Maurice, you can say no.
Okay. So someone will be planting before the rainy season comes back. Well, sometime in September before you can...
We wouldn't anticipate there would be any plantings before the ground is ready to take the plants, just because it needs to be have a little bit of water in there before it does. But, yes, that is the anticipation, and I know Mr. Dahl is hard at work looking for donations to see if we can get it.
Okay, any other council comments?
My only other comment was I think part of the confusion was... I thought we were going to get to talk one more time, and I think the landowner also got the impression that council was going to talk about it one more time. So there was confusion when suddenly dirt started to appear, and I think I was confused as well. I thought we were going to, and I guess I'm just hoping that the landowner feels like they can talk to the city more, because there was this kind of like suddenly dirt appeared, and then I got an email saying, where'd all this dirt come from? And I I wasn't sure either. I don't think I'm not mad at you, sweetie, you know. I did. Right into the mic.
I heard that. Recorded. What if I tried that? I'd be toast.
Sorry, baby.
Well, I appreciate that. And again, you know, I think that there was miscommunication, and I think that there is some good lessons learned. We've talked a lot about it on the staff level, just insofar as it. This is fairly unique in that there was a request for a pause, I guess, in the middle of the permitting review, and I think that staff did not really recognize precisely what council was requesting, and so in the future, when there are these things, we will make sure that we do get a clearer direction and to know that that we will see clarification if there is miscommunication or potential.
City clerk would like to speak, and then we'll have councilperson.
I'd like to apologize too. I think that this wasn't a full motion when we had the discussion. There was general consent to pursue it, and if you listen to the tape, you do hear that no construction will occur. But I think that we kind of, because it was general consent and it was a little murky, that's kind of where staff lost sight, where staff was more knowledgeable about the project in general, so they knew the next step was permitting, and I think maybe we didn't do a good job communicating that. That was the next step. And it's my fault as well, because I should have spoken up right there at the meeting and said, excuse me, what does pursue it mean? You know, if we're not moving forward, what does pursue it mean? Mm-hmm. And so I will commit to doing a better job of interjecting myself into your meetings when I see fit.
You never do that
to do that. I never do that now, so should be new for everyone. But, you know, it was a lesson learned for me as well, because, you know, with a general consent, you know, moving forward thing, that's never happened before where we've had something like that. And so we need to do better, and I hope that the council also will work to better clarify for us. Mm-hmm. The expectation, even in a general consent type of motion or agreement.
And it just forced us to, because if you think that I think we should make a motion. If we're going to do something, make a motion, take a vote, and that way we all know for sure that we did it. Because I walked away thinking we had one more bite at the apple.
The word said no construction start. I mean, I was the one that said that. No construction will start. So it was just dirt. Well,
nobody's construction.
Well,
just dropping dirt.
Dirt is still construction. Trust me, the price
about 100 truckloads of library.
Loading. Okay, Councilperson Hansen.
Well, some of you have already said some of the things I was going to say. That we aren't perfect. We do screw up. This was a screw up. We don't do things without motions and seconds and votes. I've been aware of consensus being taken before, but we never get to a final action as a result of that consensus. And in fact, I thought I came prepared tonight to vote on this and put a final motion on the floor, a second, and vote on it to carry this forward, because I believe that each one of us left that council meeting with a different perception. My perception is similar to some of the others, I think, that what we gave was go ahead and look into it. That was what I felt we could get. And obviously it went a little further than that. So at the appropriate time, I will make a motion to approve the use of city property, because that's what it really is, for the BMX park. And we can vote on it. That'll be done one way or the other.
Do I have a second for that?
Second.
Okay, right. So second by Councilperson Ingram. I'd like to go to public comment.
I'd like to do public comment before we vote.
You should allow more
discussion. So I would allow, and then we'll come back to have you discussion, but let's go to public comment now.
Definitely.
So anyone would like to come forward. Welcome.
Hello, Council. My name is Ruth May, and I reside at 5545 Second Avenue. I was the one that spoke at the May 20th. I believe I'm the one that brought it to everyone's attention that this was not voted to go ahead. And frankly, I am appalled that you're sitting here making light of this. I'm sorry. I heard a lot of things at that city council meeting. I thank you for stepping forward tonight and at least backing up what I walked out of this meeting with that night. I sent emails as soon as the dirt started flowing over my garden, over my chickens, on very dry days, and somebody here, I don't remember who it was, said, oh, it's going to be so simple for us to run water over there, we can do it ourselves in a day. Was there any water brought in to even try to dilute the dirt flying over our property, our chickens, our garden, the food that we eat, our home? And my emails, I'm telling you, I'm a very optimistic person. I know I don't sound like it tonight, but I'm done. And I apologize for my demeanor in advance. But I was told, I'm new to this area, and you'll all be happy to know, I've changed my voter registration, so I will be voting. My intake to this city was from the public, the disdain that they felt from the city council. And I thought, surely they're just not thinking right, they're mad. Yet that was my first introduction to this council, was disdain for its citizens. Might I remind you that you are hired by we the people to support all of us, not you, what you want, but what we all want. I was also told that I'd be lucky if even two of you responded to my emails. How many of you responded to my emails? Two of you. Two of you. It is your job to respond to the citizens of this city, of which now I am one. And frankly, I'm appalled. After I raised the issue that this was not supposed to go forward, I was under the impression, do you know, I didn't hear anything after that. Not one word from any of you. I'm sorry?
30 seconds.
Mr. Mayor, you said, oh, there's houses right next to the Bellingham track. They're hundreds of yards away. Ours is feet. So I would like you to rethink this yet again. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? I'll go back here first, then with you. Welcome.
Beth Buckland, 5775 Church Road. I'm really out of the loop on the rules of this being all next part, but has it been established hours of operation? Are there going to be lights like on the ball fields?
No.
No hours of operation?
Daylight only.
Thank you.
Next.
Good evening. My name is Joel McCary, and I reside at 5545 2nd Avenue. I composed a statement earlier, and a lot of it doesn't really, it's not, it's been addressed by Mr. Burnett and some other members, but I'll read it anyway just so you kind of get the big picture. I would like to reiterate from my previous letter earlier before the other meeting that I am not opposed to a BMX track in the city. What I am opposed to is the location. It says, I was not able to attend the last meeting regarding the BMX track, but I did review the minutes and listen to the audio of the meeting, and there was no formal vote from council to build the track. The process to investigate the next steps included the mitigation process for building the track. I received a letter about submitting a formal concern and contacted Mr. Burnett about it via phone conversation, as I was unclear about the process. I am still a bit foggy about it. From my understanding, the city was looking into mitigation measures concerning the track. I inquired as to whether there was a plan submitted to mitigate against. Mr. Burnett said, no, there wasn't. I was curious as to how to mitigate against something without a plan. I gave Mr. Burnett some of my recommendations, and that was the last I heard of anything until the excavator showed up and started clearing brush from the track site. To my fault, I did not formally submit anything because I was neck-deep in remodeling my kitchen, and the time frame to submit my concerns slipped past me. Mr. Burnett was very polite and helpful in the process, and he did send me some copies of the plans he did have of what was to be built. I'm still unclear of what is going to be built, which he addressed at his slideshow. From listening to the city council meeting audio, Mr. Dahl never really did answer Mr. Mutchler's question about what he would say to the neighbor of the BMX track and the impact it would have on their property. Having lived next to Pioneer Park for nearly 14 years, I have a pretty good idea of what to expect from, quote-unquote, the public. I have no doubt the BMX club members will be outstanding stewards of the track. It's the other people I'm concerned about. Parks tend to attract a certain element of society who are mischievous people. Granted, they're a small element, but they're out there, and they're the ones creating all the trouble to those people, or the ones that, and those people are the ones I'm concerned about. Unsupervised children do not think about what would happen if they damaged somebody else's property. Every year, I have to pick out rocks out of my yard that were thrown there by somebody's kid. Just over a week ago, we had some kids stoned to death, one of our week-old baby chickens, as they were being protected by the mother hen. There were also rocks thrown about the yard in an obvious attempt to hit the other chickens walking about the yard. A month ago, an off-leash dog got into our yard and killed two of our birds. A month before that, we lost two birds to somebody else's dog. We've not received compensation for either of those birds. During the Old Settlers picnic, we had to call the police about loud, obnoxious drunkards yelling and arguing in front of our house at 1:30 in the morning. These people were camped out at the baseball complex during the softball tournament. The police never did show up, and we've called the police on several occasions about nefarious activity around the park and at the American Legion Hall. It's to the point that when we call 911, the operator knows us by our first name. So you can see I have very little faith in the public to do the right thing. It's my belief that the BMX track is allowed to be finished being built at its current location. These issues will not only continue, but escalate without intervention. The best deterrent I can think of to protect my property is the fence, but due to the Legion Hall property being several feet higher than my property, it would require a fence approximately 12 feet high. This fence, as I've roughly estimated, would cost me about $3,500 to $4,000 if I do the work myself. The cost to me would be a direct impact to me because the city made the decision to allow the BMX track to be built in its current location. I really don't want to put a fence up, as we've had several people ask us about our chickens, our garden, and beehives, and I really enjoy educating people on the matter. But I do have to protect my animals and my property. So as much of a benefit as the BMX track would be to the city, I still believe a better location could be found. And that's all.
Thank you. Anyone else for the public like to speak? Okay, one back there, but I'll have you go first.
My name is Patrick Dahl. I live at 5603 Imhoff Road. I apologize to anybody that is against or angry with this, because obviously some people have a real bad impression on what BMX riders are. We are not all bad people. Most riders I know work really hard for what they have, because the average good BMX bike costs between $500 and $1,200. Little 20-inch BMX bike that people ride. So in order to have something like that, you have to work hard and respect your own life to keep it going. And then to have your own park, BMX riders also have to dig and donate a whole bunch of their time to have something nice, which to do it, for most of us growing up as kids, had to do it illegally on city property, hidden. And to come out one day after spending, I don't know, 20 hours a week with a shovel. You have nothing else going on in your life. Your parents are splitting up. Your dad's an alcoholic. And you're going out in this set of woods to spend 20 hours a week after school trying to pull your grades and stuff to do what you love to do. And you come out there one day, and your trails are all plowed and gone because one person that had a problem with it found out because they had garbage in their yard or something. And, you know, when you're a kid, it sucks, man. I had it happen. I cried hard. You would have thought, like, my best friend got taken from me in a car accident, man. It sucked. But that's the only argument I have for that. The other thing is, for people who live around the property, I can't give you an honest answer what that's going to do for your property because I'm not an appraiser. I don't work for the bank. The only numbers I do are my own bank accounts, in which they look pretty good for my age and having a wife and a child. And you know, I feel like I should come in here. I have tattoos. I keep them covered because I know people will judge me if I don't. And I have a nice yard, too. I have a shop, a two-car shop. I have hot rods. I have motorcycles. My family owned Bel Air Heat and Air Conditioning. I come from a really good family. And I'm not really happy right now because I just had to go... I had to go to a memorial service in Montana for my Aunt Gail Kaltzman, who was one of the owners of Bel Air, who was very close to me. So I'm sorry right now if I'm a little bit touchy. But the bike park is nothing but positive. And I can tell you right now that I drive by that lady's yard 1 to 3 times a day to look at the bike park that's not even built yet because I'm trying to get ideas. I'm going out there to make sure nobody's doing something stupid at random times of the day, which is the only way you're going to catch trouble is by random times of the day going out there, right? So, honestly, I'm a little offended because I feel right now that I'm being attacked by people, which I can understand, but I'm not putting dirt in your yard. When we dump that stuff, that dirt out there, we're on the backside of those blackberry bushes. BMX riders, I can guarantee you, were not there that day. Those chickens got killed or attacked. I'm sure the dog didn't belong to the BMX riders. And you know what? I guess I'm just going to stop right now because I'm pretty frustrated with comments made. So.
Okay, thank you. Back there. Welcome.
Thank you. I live at 504 Old Pacific Highway, which is right in front of Sullivan Plumbing. I'm also a BMX bike rider in the area. And I had a lot to say until I heard kind of the other hand flapping, I guess. And that was the argument against why we should have a track. I hadn't heard that side of it. I can obviously see why we should have a track because I like to ride a bike. But that is a huge concern, especially if you're a homeowner locally. Not having anything prepared as of now, I guess I would have to ask, is there any way we can get a wall built? How do we raise money to build a wall around this thing? I think it's a great location. I think it's extremely beneficial to the community. And it's dirt, so if it doesn't work out, we can plow it, put something else there. No loss. But I am wondering if we can raise money for a wall.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anything else from the audience? Council, let's put in a little historical perspective for someone that's been around a long time. And I understand, because I think we have to have some sympathy for the homeowner there. But let's go back in history for that house. In the late 40s, right across from the front porch of that house was a horse racing studio. It had a horse racing track. The track was where ConocoPhillips is now. Right across from their front door, I would say about 40 feet, was the stalls for the horses because I worked there shoveling the byproduct of horses. I don't know what it smelled like to that house then. I didn't even know it was there in the 40s. I worked up there. I worked off and on the track right up until the 70s where a second person tried to make the horse track racing operation work. We had jalopy races there. We had rodeos there. Probably had a lot of smelly things. It was kind of a heck of a deal. Then the city came along and it basically land dormant for a while, and then the property was turned into our first baseball field, Pioneer 4, right in front of their front door. Didn't have the tall trees shielding there. That field was busy probably every weekend in the world because softball was hot. Every summer, we put the carnival right basically in their front yard. Loud noises, the carnival people lived in their trailers right there. Then the rugby team came along and said, we want to play rugby there. We'd like to build a field house. And I can remember, I wasn't involved in the cities, you can't tell me that, but on top of the deck, probably 50 feet from the front porch, was one heck of a lot of parties. And I don't know about no alcohol being served in the park. I don't know how they got away with that rule, but there was a few beers consumed on the upper deck. Then ConocoPhillips came along. ConocoPhillips, we built a large baseball complex. Down the street from them, we built a Boys and Girls Club. I understand that their neighborhood has been completely affected. I don't have an answer for that. I don't have an answer for that. But you've heard me say this before, and I'll say it again. This community has spent millions of dollars on the Jake Lockers of the world. Baseball fields, basketball courts, football fields, track, all those things. And who are these kids? Who's Patrick Dahl? Who's the other gentleman?
I don't know, have we spent any money on them? No, we haven't. And here they're offering to build their own track. Is this going to solve the problems of the neighbors? No. I'm kind of hoping that more people in the park will chase away some of these people. I'd really like some group to take over the clubhouse and build the top so we have people there at times. We do have problems in our park. Our biggest park now with vandalism is Vanderjagt Park, because it's that parking lot back in the trees where people go back there and do bad things. I walk my dog there every weekend, and there's things like, why is that person parked in the parking lot? Why are there two cars parking lot? Why are they blacked out windows? Why are they passing back and forth between them? I don't know what to tell you about that. And I'm here to tell you that, you know what, regardless of the BMX park, this community is growing. Our sports, we have our youth football program in the fall has tripled in size. So we have football games there. We have the lights on. I feel sorry for them because we used to have lights just for baseball. Now we got the lights on for football in the fall. So there's a public park right across from their house, and it's not going to get better. And I don't know an answer to that. I don't know an answer to that. It's a large park, and it's going to get busier and busier. But I do appreciate the fact that, you know, I want to see kids from Ferndale out doing something physical. If you ever want to see how big BMX things can go, is Google up in Canada, Whistler. Oh my gosh, it's a multi-million-dollar industry. So that's my take on it. It was a screw up. I'm the one that said no construction started. How we got that? Well, you're right, Lloyd. It's a pile of dirt, but it's still construction. So, council discussion. Councilperson Watts.
I am curious, from Mr. Burnett's standpoint, is there a way to put something, a barrier, either a fence or a wall, instead of just vegetation? Because I know a 12-foot fence, I don't know if that's even legal by city standards.
It's a berm, though, first.
A wall could be constructed.
The
question
wall,
is, what are we trying to mitigate for? And that is, it's not clear to me how a vegetative fence would be different from a solid wall.
Sound and encroachment, I would think. The sound, you know, you would have a wall like on the freeway, how they have the sound walls that keep it just a little bit quieter, and also encroachment high enough so that people can't just come up over the blackberries or whatever happens to be there. Because if it's just shrub, you could come up over. I know it's a lot of money.
I wonder, well, it's not money so much as precisely how tall. Yes, everything is possible, but how tall would it need to get? Because there is an elevation gain between both the American Legion and the property. The actual property lines don't extend over, so they're adjacent. The BMX park and the property are actually kitty corner to each other.
What is that triangle? Is that their property? Because you have like the unincorporated, then you've got this triangle where their property.
I think that would be a matter for them and the adjacent property owner to discuss over the actual boundary lines that they have.
Okay.
But
that's Mr. Hillius?
That's Mr. Hillius.
I was confused by the boundary lines.
Yeah. You know, I think that anything is possible. If council wished us to determine whether or not a fence was feasible, we would also ask to understand precisely what is intended to be accomplished by it.
Okay.
Council? Further discussion? Councilperson Goodrich?
I would just like to address the lady's concerns. I'm sorry I forgot your name. One of the toughest things we have as a council member, and I'm sure the rest of you will agree with this, is how to balance the community versus individuals. We get a lot of times we do actions that people don't like. Vista Drive is an example. I get it every day at work because one of my coworkers lives on Vista Drive. And she loves to tell me how she hates the construction of Vista Drive, in no uncertain terms. So do we not do Vista Drive because it impacts a resident or a business? And it's a tough thing for us to do. You know, do we go ahead with something or we not do it? I think that in my understanding of this park from the beginning was that the the people are willing to work with it. You know, with the area to help solve some of these issues. That was my kind of my take from this, that they wanted to be a good partner to the area and to the park, and not to be a negative but a positive influence into the area. I know that there are times I've gone to there with my dog that I've seen some stuff going on in that parking lot. It's not the BMXers, it's not the American Legion, it's not the ConocoPhillips people. It's the fact that you got a parking lot at the end of the street. And it's going to, bring the bad end. And unfortunately, our police chief and his fine crew can't be everywhere and patrolling everything all at the same time. So don't take it as a personal thing, is what I'm saying. From us, it's a tough thing sometimes that we have to weigh out. And I appreciate your concerns and stuff.
And in fact, I was stopped outside and asked, would I be okay if a fence was built?
Yeah.
And I said I would be open to that. And I've never...
She needs to come forward.
I've never been feedback.
Yeah, let's hold on that.
Yeah, well, first of all, let's have you do it. Back and forth.
Okay. Councilperson Mutchler.
Thank you. Kind of the two issues tonight is one is the communication issue. I don't think anyone's defending that it was a perfectly communicated process. So we're past that with our apologies again, I think, from staff and from Lisa's council member. I think it was council member Watson that was reminding me of the acquisition of right-of-way for the Church Road and the Main Street projects. And I really had this impression from Katie and from Janice that we were going to bend over backwards to help citizens to not just appreciate the improvements of the road, but to kind of mitigate their concerns. It just felt like, as far as the law would allow us, we kind of bent over backwards to help citizens with their concerns, their driveways, their trees, fences. We've seen some nice-looking fences go up, stuff like that. And it occurred to me what I think I was looking for before I pulled the trigger on this thing, was a mitigation plan that I could understand, but that I would feel good about if I was that person living in that home. Understanding everything the mayor said, it's a unique, unique location and piece of property. And so I'm willing to vote yes on the motion that Councilmember Hansen has put forth. If there could be a, I don't want to see the park open until the mitigation has been put in place to the satisfaction of council. I can't say to the satisfaction of the homeowners because I don't know if we can do that, but I think that there needs to be a sense that we feel like we've done what we're responsible to do with the attitude of doing unto others. What if we lived there? So I'd like to make a motion to amend the primary motion that we proceed with construction but not open the park until council is satisfied that mitigation has occurred to our satisfaction.
What's the mitigation?
I don't know. We've talked about
it. I'll second the motion. I'll second the motion so we can have that discussion. Can we not?
I would have staff respond because that's. I think they're showing some frustration here.
I think that if that doesn't give staff any as much direction as we would like, where if what council is seeking is to amend the site plan to identify what the mitigation needs to be, that would be really unprecedented. It's staff's job. And council has given staff the ability to look at the mitigation. Now, if you disagree with it, it's also too late for that. From staff's perspective, as we said before, we apologize for the miscommunication, but I'm not sure that we can necessarily go back. Now, with that said, though, if there are elements of the mitigation plan that is shown on the site plan that you feel is not justified, I think we can have that conversation and make sure that it does meet what everybody's looking for. The last thing that I would say, too, is we need to have a scope for this project. So it's not just is council satisfied or not, but are the items identified on the mitigation plan completed? And that needs to be a pretty black and white determination, because otherwise it's a mission creep.
In our conversations with Mr. Dahl, I mean, he's almost thinking there might be too much dirt. And so, certainly a dirt berm, which is more sound absorbing than anything, we could explore that. But to further, that was an amendment to the motion. John, you made an amendment to the original motion. But before we go further on that, is there a second?
There was.
I did. I seconded.
Okay. So, but you're voting on something that is basically...
Well, we didn't have a chance to vote on it before.
No, but you're voting on something that
the amendments we're talking about, right?
Councilperson Hanson?
That's the only thing we're talking about.
We're only talking about we're only talking about the amendment.
Correct. Yes,
that's correct. The amendment just says that, yes, you can build this park, but council would like to make sure that before it opens... I see you shaking your head, and I understand, but the problem is we didn't get a chance to do that before, and now you're saying it's too late for us to do anything.
So my main concern is that, this is going back to what I said at the very beginning of this conversation, I have no idea how to deliver to staff this motion, because it doesn't provide details as to what exactly you
I want a 12-foot fence. Would that make you... Is that what you're asking me for?
Well, specific mitigation, but I guess that's the thing you're saying. The mitigation has to be good. But you haven't directed us as to what the mitigation would be.
Well,
and also, this is a staff process. Okay. But
I guess I'm confused then. Do you want me to tell you that I want a 12-foot fence made of a specific kind of material in a specific way with eight...
Let me go forward here. It's a little... difficult only because if this isn't exactly accurate, I'm sorry, but the homeowner's property line goes like this, with the American Legion here, and the BMX park here, so they share a corner. The problem is if we want to put, let's say we want to put a 12-foot fence along their property line, unfortunately, their garden and their chickens is past their property line into the UGA. So, do you want us to continue the fence past the end of their property? And that's based on the idea that the vegetation here in the corner is inadequate. So, if we put it on to their property line, it won't help because it will simply give you a 12-foot fence between the parking lot of the American Legion and their back property. So, going to what Yuri said, by wanting something else, a fence, the assumption has to be that the existing mitigation, that is the mound with the plants, isn't what you want. And the hard part is that I don't know if a 12-foot fence here is going to help any more than a vegetative mound here. If the BMX park was next door, literally next door, then there could be something. But again, we're just sharing a corner here. And so I wouldn't want to put the fence over here because then you couldn't have the berm. And you don't want a 10-foot berm with a 12-foot fence.
I think we're all confused about where the property lines are then, because I assumed that I thought from the picture I saw that they were much more adjacent. That at least, half their yard was adjacent.
You still
we're gonna put
because that's the confusing. I thought that at least half of their backyard was adjacent to the park.
I don't think so, and maybe I'm off on this a little bit, but that's my understanding.
We have to remember that the use of the property does not necessarily mean that that's where the property lines are, and so. Based on the legal descriptions that we were looking at, as well as the city map data, the neighbor's property line ends east of where some of the chicken coop or garden shed is, which would seem to indicate that their property isn't as adjacent as has been typically thought, perhaps.
Because the aerial photograph that you have makes it look like that it's much farther to the west than it is.
Yes, and the legal description said that the property line ends at the city of Ferndale city limits. Again, when we're looking at mitigation, we need to look and ask, what are we mitigating for? That the goal is not a fence. The goal of the fence is to mitigate an impact, and can it successfully mitigate that impact? And so, is it a visual impact? Is it a noise impact? Does SEPA say you will return to the previous existent or previous condition? And no, it doesn't. It says that it will mitigate to the greatest extent possible adverse environmental impacts. And that is what we believe that the mitigation does do is, yes, there will continue to be impacts, and to a certain extent they will be increased, but the mechanism for SEPA is not to restore to the current conditions. It's to avoid to the greatest extent possible those impacts.
So if you had a BMX park there and it was making, there was a lot of noise and people had come over the hill, not necessarily the BMX folks, but if people were using it to come over the hill, the SEPA process, you're basically saying that people would just have to deal with the fact that now there's a park next to them?
No, there is already a park next to them. As far as SEPA is concerned, it then gets into the act of being a nuisance. Where we believe that it did mitigate for the adverse conditions. Anyone has the ability then to appeal a SEPA determination and to comment on the SEPA determination while that process is going. Again, we did not receive any formal comments. I was not informed of a fence request or anything like that.
Well, it's roles and sense, so let's get away from that. Let's talk about the property and the mitigation.
All right, so property.
Where's the official property line?
I believe it's the blue.
Okay.
So you can see the actual interaction is right in there. This is on Scott Hillius' piece of property, and we can ask him whether or not he has concerns. He's not here.
So, Council, you still have that amendment to vote on. Now that you see the picture in front of you, I'm not so sure. Do you want to add some clarity to your amendment? Councilperson Hanson?
Well, I have some difficulty with the amendment in several levels. One of the levels has to be the gray area. It's a nebulous kind of thing. Council satisfaction? I know the seven people sitting on this council, and we could be here 3 years from now and still not be satisfied. That's really not, it needs to be far more finite than that. The 12-foot fence thing that came up. Okay, if you said we're going to require mitigation with a 12-foot fence, and we are going to require it along this property line for this many feet, now we have something we can grab onto and say, if that happens, the park opens. If it doesn't happen, the park doesn't open. But a vegetative barrier that the council can be happy with before it opens, I don't know what. I'm not enough of a landscaper engineer. I'm a little bit of a landscaper. I'm not an engineer. I can't tell you what it is that would satisfy me.
Okay. Councilperson Goodrich and then Councilperson Olson.
My question to staff, did the Parks Board weigh in on any of this? It was my recollection that the council meeting was before the Parks Committee or the Parks Board, and this was going to cut after us. It was going to go to the Parks Board that following Wednesday or something. What is the Parks Board's take on the site plan and stuff like that? and
I'm getting thumbs up from the Parks Board. And Mr. Dahl met with them several times beforehand and I believe after.
Councilperson also,
so they were fine with the site plan and
well, that, I don't think they got into it that
did they either. Not get that or
no, they approved the location of the BMX bike park. I guess it even he showed the pictures of the jumps and the shapes, but that's an ever-changing endeavor. You know, so you got to think of a pile of dirt, and then the shapes will change. You know, weekly, daily, monthly. Councilperson Olson,
Yori, we keep talking about this 12-foot fence. Isn't residential limited to 6 feet?
It is.
I just threw that out there.
I wonder where you got it.
I think they're probably lower than
their property.
American Legion. I think the gentleman back there said that due to the difference in the topography of their versus American Legion,
but
he would need something like a 12-foot fence. So that's, I think,
but that's, I think that's against the code. So all we could talk about is a 6-foot fence, if anything.
Okay. But there is no code on a dirt berm.
Vegetation.
No.
With vegetation. Okay. Councilperson Ingram and then Councilperson Zimmerman.
You go back to that.
There you go.
Right there.
You get your pointer. I have a difficult time explaining where else I'm going to
red dot. You want to grab your microphone while you're doing it there, Paul? Or you grab keys? Grab the keys.
So if this blue line is the property line?
Yes.
That's our understanding.
I believe, yes.
What's going on out here? Because I've been down there. I'm a member of American Legion. And I've walked out to the corner. And it looks to me like some of their farming endeavors are over their property line into the UGA. And I'm not sure that that's legal.
Well, it's not untypical. I mean, you know, obviously, I mean, I don't think what Mr. Helius was the first different property owner for that property in the last probably 50 years. So I'm not so sure that's – I doubt if the property line has been established. I don't know. I understand where you're going with that conversation, but I'm going to defend the property owner there. It's, it, you know, looks like they, you know, they've cleared into it. That isn't entirely uncommon. I'm going to go to Councilor Zimmerman, and I'll go back to Watson.
Bring up some kind of the good, the bad is all the points. My kind of Joel, address this to you.
Talk loudly so it can record.
There we go. Now we're rolling.
There we go. It's a two-edged sword, and I really like what you've done with your property down there. You're my image of, you know, urban farmers with what you're trying to do. But just up until a few years ago, having chickens in Ferndale was illegal, and we kind of, through John Mutchler and myself and a few other people, said, well, let's try to make this happen for people like yourself, because there's a lot of people in Ferndale that do not want chickens in the urban area at all. So we had to go back and forth and back for that. So knowing that not everything works out for everybody, is there a dollar amount for the chickens that were met their demise? Is it like, would $200-$300 work more or less? Very expensive chickens, or okay. I'd say if there was a some sort of a fund, but the idea of if there was damages and we would say whatever. But the other idea. Thank you, Sam. But it seems also here that this is a raised area here, right by the American Legion, and there's rocks available for those little kids that are unsupervised or taking pot shots at your chickens and stuff like that. Could it be an option that we had some fruit trees or something of your choosing for you to plant along there, and we can work with American Legion just to kind of build you some sort of visual barrier so people wouldn't, you know, attack your chickens and stuff like that. But as it says, here's the property line. Is there anything that we could do to help rectify the situation? Because a 12-foot fence is going to be spendy. A 6-foot fence is going to be spendy. And I'm not even sure if it's going to do it. But is there something that would, you know, ease the damage that is possibly caused, and you know, for forgiveness and compassion of what the kids want to do, what the urban farmers want to do, and the chickens and everything? Could something be brought, you know, to your ability to recharge.
We're not having a
well, I'm just saying, try to bring some mediation option because we're talking some money.
But you're asking them to respond, and at this point, that's not possible. So, we'll go to staff.
Just counsel, with all due respect, this is why you hire staff, so that we can consult with one another during the full 40-hour week, give the public the opportunity in a typical, consistent process, and then come up with mitigation measures, and then, if necessary, have them appealed. But this is why you hire professional staff. Not to say that any of the possible mitigation measures that counsel has brought up are not as good or possibly even better than some of the ideas that staff had, but so that we can have a predictable process that the public can anticipate. When we have these comment periods, they need to follow the process that's been identified by the state of Washington for people to go through, because it does get messy. It does get confusing. I guess that's all I have.
You just follow it?
Okay, just a second.
Please don't do that.
Okay, now, counsel, what you have in front of you is the amendment. It's been moved and seconded. We can vote on that amendment, see if we're going to discuss, that amendment, obviously you've told staff is confusing. I'm not so sure it's what you were looking for, but that amendment is before you. You already understand where you're coming from, but the council can make good amendments, bad amendments, good motion, bad motions, that's politics. So before you is the amendment brought forward by Councilperson Mutchler, seconded by Councilperson Watson, and we're going to vote on that. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, that fails. Now, the original motion brought forward by Councilperson Hansen is to
approve the park, the site plan, the whole thing, as approve the use of the city-owned site for BMX Park.
Correct. Okay.
No restrictions.
No, it's already been moved and seconded. So.
No restrictions.
It was a while ago.
Paul did.
It was about an hour ago.
Yes, Councilman Ringham seconded.
Mm-hmm. He's on the ball. Okay, so that motion. I see no further discussion on that motion. Councilperson Ingram.
Well, just one comment. I don't know if it's going to spark a whole lot more discussion. We've been here in quite a while. What did they went through the process of the SEPA report and all that stuff, correct? Was there anything brought up by that process that said you might consider that you should do this or that or the other thing to mitigate any potential problems?
We received no written comments on the SEPA. I did talk to Mr. McCary, on the phone, and we incorporated some mitigation measures that we felt were appropriate, but no, we did not receive any written comments.
Thank you.
Okay, further discussion? Okay, seeing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Nay. No.
Okay. Motion carries with Councilperson Watson and Mutchler voting no. Staff, though, I think you did hear from the council. I think the council wants to be aware of the berm or some kind of mitigation. I think we owe it to the neighborhood and everything, and I think we're prepared to do that.
So. Absolutely.
Okay. Next, the first of our three public hearings. This is a public hearing on the comprehensive plan, capital facilities.
Is there 2 pages of this short? Not the back.
I don't recognize the one in your right hand.
What's that one?
I might have grabbed it off the printer.
I'll just hold it for you.
Okay, that might be a good idea.
Pass it around. We can read it.
Might be in.
So we have 2 public hearings. One of them is capital facilities. The other one is school impact fees. They are related to one another, where if you do not approve the first, there's really not much reason to consider the second. So that's not trying to get you into denying the first one in order to save time. No. Comprehensive plan amendment. The city of Ferndale is allowed to update its comprehensive plan no more than once per calendar year. This is our once annual update to our comprehensive plan. what we are proposing to do is to update our capital facilities element. Our capital facilities element is that element that describes the facilities that we own and identifies further what improvements we feel need to be made to those facilities over the next period of time. So, for example, this facility, this building, is included in the capital facilities element. So is the library, so is the police station, so is City Hall, so are a variety of our other infrastructure, not including transportation or our utilities, which are covered separately. We last updated this in 2011, and we felt the need to update it now for a couple of different reasons. Since that time, we have moved our police department. Since that time, we have authorized construction of a new library. So we wanted to update that for 2013. We also saw that our capital facilities element, some parts of it would have expired in 2012. We want to extend it to 2016 so that we can do a full upgrade as part of the 2016 comprehensive plan process. Last thing is the Ferndale School District was in the same boat as we were. Everyone was expecting to update the comprehensive plan a couple of years ago, but the state allowed an extension. We found that there were several capital facilities plans that would have died before they were renewed. In order to keep on levying development impact fees, school impact fees, we would need to update this. We've worked very closely with the city attorney, Dan and Traxler, as well as the school district. Most of the changes are very straightforward. However, I have sent out this errata sheet looking for some clarification on some things. The City Hall Annex on Exhibit CFE, referring to the Pioneer Pavilion as the structure that houses the library, where the library is a current tenant, and also amending some language on page 30 of the Capital Facilities element to talk about the increase that the library has experienced since it moved from its former location to its new location. I know that Councilmember Watson might have some further clarification on that. That's all I have.
Okay, staff or questions from council? Remember, this is a public hearing, so we'll open up the public later. Councilperson Watson?
Just as a clarification, the change in circulation is actually nearly 20% since 2010. And you could probably just change that sentence, the nearly 20% increase or a 20% increase from 2010 period, and then door counts and new patrons. Just get rid of the other 2009 data.
Since 2010.
Yeah. And I actually asked for Pioneer Pavilion to be pulled out separately because it will eventually will be its own building. And so I was wondering, do we want to call it the library or do we want to call it Pioneer Pavilion? Because it really is a city facility that the library is temporarily using.
You're suggesting just two lines, actually, one for library and one for Pioneer Pavilion.
That's correct. Calling it out separately.
We could do that.
Yeah, it does. Okay, further council questions? Okay, seeing none, this is a public hearing. I'll read the public hearing speech. This will apply to three of them to save time, so we have three public hearings. So if you want to speak at the other public hearings coming up, remember my speech. I'm sure you all memorize it completely. A public hearing is a form or opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in the decision-making process. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Audience member who signed up prior to the beginning of our meeting will be called up first to speak at this public hearing. I don't think we have anyone signed up. If you're unable to sign up before the meeting, you'll be given an opportunity to address the council once we've gotten through all the speakers listed on the hearing sheets. Each speaker should state his name and address for the record and be given 3 minutes to address the council. When a large group of individuals supports the same position on an issue, we encourage selection of one or two representatives to speak on behalf of the entire city council. So at 7:23:48, I'll open up the public hearing. Anyone wish to speak on this subject? Okay, everybody's excited. Okay, at 7:23:58, I'll close the public hearing. Got through that pretty quick. It's to you, Yori.
We feel that this is pretty straightforward. There's going to be more policy implications in 2016, but not now.
Councilperson Messler?
I move the adoption of Agenda Bill 13-8-003, updating the comp plan.
Second.
Moved and second by Councilperson Watson. Further discussion, seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Okay, next up, public hearing on the school impact fee ordinance.
Okay, also related to this, school impact fee ordinance was adopted in 2006. Prior to that time, the school district collected mitigation through the CEPA process on a kind of case-by-case basis as developments came in. What we found back in 2006 was the school district was not being consistent and was probably not getting the full or the appropriate reasonable impact of new residential development from them. Again, school impact fees apply only to residential development. They don't apply to commercial development or industrial development. We looked at this chapter because it was written pre-recession, and as with a lot of other land use things, pre-recession and post-recession is a pretty significant difference. Cities operate differently, school districts operate differently. So we went through and we made a number of changes again with the school district. If I can characterize those changes, I would say that it places the responsibility much more on the school district now, or as proposed, than it does now, where the city's responsibility is really only to make sure that the fees, whatever fees need to be paid, are paid before we either issue or approve a development. It's the school district's responsibility to determine precisely how much it's going to be, whether waivers are granted, whether or not there's an acceptance of in lieu, you know, this developer will purchase a new park or something or playground equipment for the school district. That's all up to the school district, and so is defending the collection of fees if it was challenged. If for some reason the school district didn't expend the fees that were taken in, and if they get appealed, it's not the city's responsibility to defend the school district, and that's what this shows. So the other thing that we worked on with the school district is allowing more of that flexibility, in-kind contributions, in-lieu payment, affordable housing, senior living, those sort of exemptions. So this brings it much more in line with all of our other impact fees, where while the city might perhaps charge more than some neighboring jurisdictions, we allow flexibility so that the impact is more commensurate, or the payment is more commensurate with the impact. So again, we have worked very closely with the school district, and we've worked very closely with Dan and Traxler, and we recommend approval following public hearing.
Council, any questions to staff? Councilperson Olson, then Watson.
Yori, in committee, all three of us pretty much had the same concern about the school district reporting.
Yes, sir.
Yearly. Did we get that in there or not?
Yes, sir. Thank you for reminding me. We did. I am not going. Oh, I found it on page 134 of your packet. The district shall provide the city an annual report showing the source and amount of school impact fees. This report shall be made to the community development director, where I would then forward it on to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilperson Watson?
And I was just curious, why did you add townhouses for multifamily units? How did townhouses get added to it?
Where is this located?
Page 128, I believe.
I think I know the reason. I just want to confirm. Is it top or bottom?
It's right. It's above section 15.50.040. Up here it says, and for the purposes of this chapter, shall include townhouses.
Mm-hmm. That's consistent with our definitions in other locations where the townhouses, while they are single-family, mm-hmm. as per the building code, have really precisely the same characteristics of a multifamily as okay. far as occupancy, how many people, even demographics in some cases.
Okay.
Any other customers? Mutchler?
Yeah, I didn't know, and then appreciate Sam Taylor's quick explanation is when you build a home in Ferndale, you pay a school impact fee. If you're still in the Ferndale School District but not in the city of Ferndale, you don't pay that impact fee, which
right.
is, I guess, a result of the county not being in compliance with GMA. Is that, am I saying that correctly?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting side note, because one could argue that it places a bigger burden on city citizens who are using the same schools than those in the county.
Well said.
Mm-hmm. They're not collecting any impact fees.
No, they can't.
That's
they're not.
Just for the record, so people
it's
know
It's been
that.
Duly noted several times. Okay, any other questions of staff, council?
Okay, seeing none, we'll open up the public hearing. Would anyone in the public like to speak on this? Anyone? Anyone? You're all excited.
Don't be afraid.
Okay, 7:29:35, we open. 7:29:36, we close. Okay, good. We're rolling on. Council, Councilperson Mutchler?
I move the adoption of Agenda Bill 13-8-003.
Second.
Second by Councilperson Watson. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion carries 7-0. Okay, moving on. Administrative flexibility ordinance.
Okay.
Does it mean, can you touch your knees to your nose?
Let's not get personal. Harassing the staff.
I'm at a loss for words. This proposal also has two parts, and I think that's going to be important for council to remember. Because some parts might be more easy for you to consider than others.
What are you saying?
I'm sorry?
What are you saying?
You might be a little bit slow.
Okay.
So the administrative flexibility ordinance, two parts. One of them has to do with the general business zone, which is one of our relatively new zones created in 2009. Stretches really along the freeway, on both sides of the freeway, both south of Main Street and then on the east side north of Main Street. It's a zone that's intended to combine commercial and industrial activities, really give the ability for businesses to have everything that they need there, from offices to retail to even manufacturing in there. It's also really probably our most highly visible zone, and it replaced the highway commercial zone, which was intended to benefit or have really a relationship with the highway. Earlier this year, the city was approached by two or three individual property owners commenting on the amazing expansion of the Bellingham International Airport had caused, and the obvious market with the lower mainland of British Columbia, had caused an obvious market potential for park and rides or airport parking. So staff initiated an amendment to the code where airport parking really isn't discussed. In 2009, we were struggling to keep our heads above water, and the Bellingham International Airport had just lost Western Airlines and was struggling to have really much going on. Almost immediately after that, it blew up, and there was a ton of new airport traffic.
Airport.
No, I'm sorry, wrong word. Explosively increased. It's that's no better.
Much better.
No. Okay.
Been a long night.
I'll think somewhere else.
Rapid expansion.
Yes.
Logarithmic.
Okay, let's move on.
Okay. We initiated that zoning text amendment to add it into the general business zone. We felt that was a logical zone for airport park and rides to be. We thought it was logical, and really the city needed to take a step to accept that they are probably part of our future. Soon after that, the city was approached by another property owner. The first couple didn't really materialize. By another property owner who was in process of actually opening up one of these airport park and rides. Since that time, we've worked with that property owner to see if we could get to the point where he could complete his business and we could still defend our codes. At this point, we have not quite gotten there because since we still do not include airport park and rides as either a permitted or conditional use, we don't really have a box to put it in. So what we are proposing and what Planning Commission has recommended is that airport park and rides, airport parking and park and rides, as well as increasing retail, which is kind of separate, be added into the general business zone. The airport park and ride would be as a conditional use as per the Planning Commission's recommendation, rather than a permitted use where it would be just administratively reviewed. The property owner, and I believe he will comment because he is here, has stated to the Planning Commission and to staff that he feels that this use is more appropriate as a permitted use because it is similar in nature to other uses that are allowed in the zone. And I'll let him speak to that because I think he can say it much more eloquently than I can. The second part of this proposal does relate back into this, ironically. We have permitted uses. which are allowed by right. They're reviewed by staff. It goes through the environmental process, all that, but it doesn't require a public hearing. Then we have conditional uses, which are reviewed by our hearing examiner, kind of land use judge, and there's a public hearing where the public has the opportunity to come right up here and to provide their 2 cents. Right now in our code, it states that any use that is not listed, well, okay, let me back up. We have permitted uses, we have accessory uses, and we have conditional uses. The legal convention of the way it's written is that you, the council, have determined that those are the uses that are allowed in the city of Ferndale, and that any other use not listed could be pages and pages and pages. Any other use not listed is prohibited then. That is the way that we must look at it, because it would be simply too difficult to list every single possible use. Right now, the code says any use not listed, which is similar in nature or effect, needs to be processed as a conditional use, regardless of whether or not it's similar to a permitted use or similar to a conditional use. It needs to be processed as a conditional use. What we are proposing is to say, if in the judgment of the zoning administrator, me, after consultation with members of the technical review committee, other staff people, if we feel that a use is similar to a permitted use, it can be processed as a permitted use. If we feel that a use is similar to a conditional use, it would be processed as a conditional use. This is very similar to every other jurisdiction that I looked at in a random survey. It leaves us open a little bit more to potential appeal. If someone disagrees with us, then they can appeal that. There's a potential that those appeals would increase, because we're making more calls right there at the counter than taking probably the safer route and going to the conditional use process. But we feel that it's a risk worth taking, because it allows us to give that immediate response to an applicant. It allows them to avoid up to 70 days of waiting to get in front of the hearing examiner, and it saves them about $3,000 in just the hearing examiner costs. So staff wholeheartedly recommends this. As you can see, the two are related to one another. Planning Commission has also recommended approval.
Okay, Council, lively discussion in committee. This is a public hearing, so your opinions are not on this go-round. Your opinion is after the public hearing. You can have questions of the technical nature of staff. Councilperson Olson, then Councilperson Mutchler.
Yori, the three of us had, John, Kathy, and myself, had that same question about yourself being intimidated, working for someone other than him. And you were going to see what you could do to remedy those concerns.
Yes.
Did you come up with anything?
Yes. So what we recommended was a consultation with the other members of the technical review committee. And we felt that would not increase the time, but it would have the reliance where I would talk to Janice, I would talk to the assistant planner, the associate planner, I would talk to the plans examiner as well, and get that in writing, either via email or something that's signed, where there's strength in numbers, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. Not all the members of the TRC are at-will employees, I think at-will, where...
How many are?
It's about split 50-50.
Fire chief as well.
Mm-hmm. We think that would give us enough of a defense without having to ask everyone and their mother what their opinion was.
Okay, but I'll go back to my same question. If we have 2 union represented and 8-9 represented, how's that going to work? I mean, you got 2 guys that don't have to worry about their jobs. You got 8 to do.
Mm-hmm.
What is the makeup of this technical review committee?
It's 50-50, really, with the chief being the outlier, where it's Janice and really her deputy, me and my deputy, and then the chief.
Okay, so that's 5 people.
And it's 60% could not be fired by the mayor immediately.
And Council, what he's referring to is, it is a valid concern in certain cities. I mean, a mayor has the ultimate power. The mayor can, fire at will, and it happens on a regular basis. 2 weeks after the election, and everybody goes. But it's hard. You already talked about this, to find and to detail it down. I guess an evil person is an evil person, and you know the problem is you elect somebody you have 4 years to deal with it. So, but we looked at other options, but it's there isn't an ironclad protection of employees against a mayor who decides differently.
And the other thing, we're such a small city that, gosh, that's half of our staff right there.
Yeah.
You know.
That, for those of you that weren't in that committee, our concern was what if we were replaced by someone, say, prior to Mr. Jensen, who would intimidate the at-will employees and, no, this oil change place is just like a donut shop, and therefore you're going to allow it. And that was our thing, how to not get in that situation.
To protect the staff, to give staff some protection.
Councilperson Mutchler, and then Goodrich.
Really quickly, on the cost, the difference in conditional and permit is about $3,000 and 70 days, okay? And then the second question, the city initiated this zoning change, it sounds like some time back, for the parking lots. Had a citizen initiate that change, what would have been the cost to that person to initiate a zoning change? Did the council say approved or not approved? It's not cheap, is it?
No, right around $1,500,
okay.
I think.
And then could you help me out a little bit? We create these zones, gateway, general business, industrial. What's the general guiding principle that leads to a permitted versus a conditional? And there's sort of a, when you guys did that, I was kind of looking at them, and you know, I don't see maybe why that couldn't have been permitted. So what kind of goes into that thinking when you sort of have two lists here?
That's a great question. It really is. A lot, and you probably have different layers of what different councils were thinking or staff were thinking at the time. At its most basic level, it would be really what are the technical merits? Are there uses that are more intense or more variable where we need to attach site-specific conditions here and there on there? And then those would be a conditional use. So, or something slightly unusual, multifamily in a single-family zone might be one example. And then you look at another layer or another era where conditional uses were probably added in because they were not as desirable. An example that I have that I don't necessarily understand, but of course I have to defend because it's in the code, is in this zone, in the downtown zone, a manicurist, a hairstylist are permitted, yet a tattoo parlor is not. Now, tattoo parlors, I think, have changed over time in the way that they're looked at, but the hearing examiner needs to understand what they're actually looking at. Are they hearing this just to have a public hearing and to give the people, the members of the public, the opportunity to be heard? Or are there specific conditions that he needs to be looking at? Does this add more traffic? Is this consistent with that or that? When we just have a conditional use where, like a tattoo parlor, it's not clear to the hearing examiner what he's making his decision on beyond who's in the audience and are they generally supportive and is staff generally supportive or not. But I would defend conditional uses because they do allow you to look at the site-specific characteristics where you might have a use that in one neighborhood you would not need to worry about things like buffering or noise impacts or things like that. But in another neighborhood on a different site, you would. And so being able to put those conditions on there, those site-specific conditions where the municipal code doesn't necessarily address them, that's a big help, and it's a big help to the community, not just to staff.
So would it be fair to say it's both? It's the aesthetics. Somebody might have a problem with tattoos or whatever it is, but there's technical issues. Conditional. I mean, there's some things that need to be done, usually in this situation, that we need to apply.
Yes.
So you could take them both to the bank.
Absolutely. And if you could stop time, thank you, Sam. If you could stop time, I would love to go through the municipal code and really look at each one of them individually.
Not now, though, right?
Not now.
Councilperson Goodrich.
Our storage unit places, I know the Bounty Storage has changed its name, I noticed here. Are they in the same zone as the park and ride, and are they looked at similarly? Because I know, like the La Bounty one had RV storage, but I noticed when I drove by, all the RV stuff is gone. So I don't know if they're not doing that anymore.
They sold, so something changed.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If the new owners have decided to do away with RV parking, is that kind of
similar, or is that where the similar comes in? Or
they are in the same zone, and that is our question to you. We don't believe that park and rides are similar in that we think that they should have their own line item. We think that since park and rides are probably part of our future, that in order to not go through this relatively lengthy process that the city and the property owner have gone over, that this city council should help out future staff and future city councils by giving us direction. Park and rides are permitted uses, or they are conditional uses in the general business zone.
And the proposal to, in front of us tonight is conditional?
Yes, but you do have the ability to recommend permitted, or to adopt permitted.
Okay, council, further questions, staff, before we go to the public hearing? Seeing none, okay, I'll open the public hearing at 7:45:18. I do have two people to speak, so that's good. First up is Fred Kennedy. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to say thank you to the Fred Kennedy, 2636 Low Karen Drive. And thank you to Mayor, Council, and staff, and engineering for all the hard work you guys and gals put in, especially on some of the difficult topics we've been addressing this evening. So thank you. Although I'm on Planning Commission, I'm not here with my Planning Commission hat on. I got my contractor shirt on today. Nice and bright orange so everybody can see. As a local contractor here with about 25 employees, building permits, that's our lifeblood for our business. It helps generate jobs. It helps keep our families fed. It helps me come up to the guys each day and say, hey, you know, you've got a job to go to next week. Building permits are also a springboard for new and local businesses to grow here in Ferndale and, you know, create jobs and also generate revenue for our city. So this proposed administrative flexibility ordinance, from my perspective, is an indispensable tool for council to help businesses grow and thrive in Ferndale and also help cover some of the gaps that we just discussed in our current code. We've talked a little bit about park and ride. I want to talk about one in particular who is in a mixed-use commercial zone. They are ready to go to permit. Design is ready. They're approved by the SBA. They're well-funded. The bank is ready. They are similar in nature to 4 out of the 78 permitted uses, but they're not similar to any of the conditional, so they fall in a hole. It should be a slam dunk for this little business to come in, but since they're not on the conditional side and they're not on the permitted side, I've got a client who is, you know, kind of losing revenue and he's losing interest. So my goal is to help keep that interest level up and ask council to approve this administrative flexibility so we may move them forward and generate some jobs here in Ferndale. It's a 2,700 square foot business. It's a creamery. I mean, they make cheese. We certainly have no shortage of cows here, so it seems like a great business to have here. For them to go through, we've already delayed about 2 months. And if we have to go through the conditional permit, that's another 2 or 3 months and another $3,000. So that's almost half a year delay for a small business, which is tough on them. Mm-hmm. So my goal is to request council to be able to look at them in a permitted use section.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Greg Grant. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Good evening, and I thank you as well for your hard work. This is a lot of stuff going on. I am in favor of the administrative flexibility for the staff to be able to inject common sense to things that oftentimes don't have that. I am totally against the Planning Commission's response about moving parking into conditional use. Land use compliance with conditional use is very expensive, $3,000 plus the time for the business to be involved in it. You got to hire consultants. It burdens staff with increased cost to taxpayers. Burdens the business. The conditions imposed are always making business more expensive to operate. The proposal before the council is an additional land use burden that needs to be avoided. I recommend that you adopt airport parking as a permitted use. You know, the zoning allows on our facility, and I understand that you're starting from scratch lot, a bare lot, or a facility that is not common or like parking facilities. I can understand that's a different set of rules. In our case, the zoning allows for car lots, which is simply a big parking lot with cars. And people drive them back and forth to look at and buy a car. Plus, the car lot has other services that Chambers have had for years, rentals, leasing, parts, repair, painting, whatever. Airport parking, we're not a park and ride. I don't even know what that is, except they've got them on the off-ramps at some of the on the south side. Here, you're not parking and riding. You're coming in, you're paying to park. I'm in business to charge a fee for these cars to be stored. And so airport parking is just a big parking lot with probably fewer cars than what Chambers had, and the actual use of the property is exactly the same, a parking lot full of cars with people coming and going. Now, when you look at the permitted uses, none of them say, for example, automobile sales and storage. Well, it's obvious you have to store the cars in order to sell them. So parking, sales, storage, vehicle sales down here, item R, just vehicle sales. So I believe that the writers of the Constitution here were trying to say that in order to sell cars, you've got to store them. And we're storing cars, and I think it's that simple. So I'm asking the council to take parking lots and use them as a permitted use. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else on this subject for the public hearing? Anyone else? Okay, I'll close the public hearing at 7:50:57. Yuri?
I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Councilperson Mutchler was first.
My question is going to be similar to Mr. Grant's. P is truck rentals permitted, Q is vehicle leasing renting permitted, and R is vehicle sales. That's a segregated Chambers, Robinson Chambers. And I'm trying to recall for the life of me, I remember Planning Commission saying they wanted conditional use, but I don't recall the specific reasons or rationale for that. So a couple are here. Maybe I just don't remember, except I know they wanted the conditional. I don't remember the rationale behind it. Maybe you do.
Well, I'll say what I remember and then see whether or not they agree with me or not. I think that Planning Commission did have a little bit difficult time putting their finger on precisely what they felt made an airport parking or commercial parking different from one of those. I know that they had talked a little bit about the appearance, maybe having to do more with landscaping, that landscaping would help to soften the real or perceived impacts of those. They also talked a little bit, if I recall correctly, about concerns about them kind of aggregating together, where you have one and then you have another, and all of a sudden you have similar to automobile dealerships, a kind of strip of airport park and rides. But they also were pretty clear that they did not feel that they were similar to any of the, maybe similar, that they weren't identical to any of the ones listed. And that's one of the reasons why staff agrees that an airport or commercial parking lot needs to be listed separately, because it, even if you can't put a finger on it, that they are different from truck rental or another of those listed. But I don't know if one of the planning commissioners has another perspective.
Are you asking them to come up to speak? Or?
I'm just seeing if they want.
Do they have anything to add?
Okay. Further questions of staff? Councilperson Goodrich?
It seems like we have two different issues here in one amendment thing. Is it something we should do as a separate thing, one for the airport park and ride and then another for the administrative change? I would feel more comfortable doing it as two separate votes versus one.
Is it the same ordinance? Modifying the same chapter?
It is.
It is modifying several chapters, but yes, it's included.
So it's a different chapter. Yes, you could do that. It would, depending on how the votes go, it could be odd for staff and how we address. We might have to rewrite an ordinance, basically. That's the only thing I'm thinking of.
And I see there as being two possible things. One of them would be allowing the administrative flexibility in all of the chapters, And then the other one would be within the general business zone where you place the airport park and ride, or commercial parking, airport park and rides, and retail.
Councilperson Ingram?
To clarify, yes, you can do that. It might be, though, that you make a motion for both, you could make a motion for one, but then if you leave it on the table and it doesn't get approved, that would be easier to pull out. Yes, Tori? If you just pull out one item. As long as I'm doing it right.
Yes, that is very true. You're a genius, Sam.
Claire?
Well, I was going to make a motion, but I'm not sure.
Well, I think about it. I'll come right back to you.
Okay.
Councilperson Ingram?
Well, my question is this. If we approve this administrative flexibility ordinance, why do we have to specify? We shouldn't have to say conditional or non-conditional. That's narrowing it down. And where's this flexibility now? If we want to give staff, and I think it's a fantastic tool, to give staff the flexibility to make those decisions at staff level, let's vote to give them that flexibility and leave the rest of it alone. Because otherwise, we're tying them down, and now they're not flexible. You can't touch your head to your knees if your head's tied to the wall.
I'm going to touch my head to my knees.
There's some imagery.
But that is part of the question is, I don't know which way the four of you would lean as far as whether or not the airport parking should be a conditional or permitted use.
That should be part of your flexibility. You make that call. Your staff, you've got the paperwork, you see the documents.
I think that was big enough.
I was going to say, I really appreciate the confidence that the council has in staff, but staff needs to, I guess, have some cover as well. I mean, one person's parking lot is another person's three-story parking garage, which in most cases is drastically different, but you're parking cars. What's the difference? So there needs to be some bookend so we don't replace the time that staff spends explaining the code with explaining why we can't be as flexible as folks would want us to be. Because flexibility is in the eye of the beholder, and especially if that beholder is one that wants their project done, flexibility is the greatest thing in the world. So I think there needs to be a middle ground. This, I think, does it insofar as it does allow for some flexibility. I'd like to see something in here that would have the staff in consultation with the TRC then document why the use is similar in nature, so there's some after-the-fact review of that, or if there is some after-the-fact review of that, someone come back and say, this is why they thought it was similar.
So,
your floor.
It sounds to me like it's a possibility that maybe, just maybe, we ought to run this back to committee and iron these things out there and then bring it on back. Yeah. Bring it back to the next meeting. I mean, sounds like there's quite a bit of...
You could do that. In the interest of time, this is the one time that we have allowed a dictatorship. Mayor uses his power to extend the meeting to 8:30.
You 8:30. Dictator, you...
I'll
third it.
Why are we...
The meeting went to 9.
Why
the meeting goes to 9.
Excuse me. That's right. I'm back to the old rules.
Well,
we're still going to 8:30 then.
Daylight savings time is really
There we go. So, are you making a motion to do that?
I will make such a motion that we send this back to committee, iron out all these little questions that we've all been asking here for the last half an hour, because it sounds to me like I'm not totally clear on which way would be better for staff to go, and I'd like to have them come back and say, here's what we really need. This is the tool we really need. We need to be able to have the flexibility to do this instead of this.
Okay, and now, so we're going to go back. Do we have a second for that?
I'll second.
Okay, now, to staff, I mean, you wrote a recommendation. You want to restate your recommendation?
Yeah. I think I do like the city administrator's recommendation that we document the reasons. And also we do need to have that backup. I think that with his amendment, it would provide us what we're looking for, because we do want to...
Well, if you'll make that into an amendment to the thing, then I'll withdraw my motion, because that's what I need to hear.
Motion's still there. Councilperson Goodrich?
I'm going to vote against this because I think the giving them the flexibility that's stated is good. Unlike our city administrator, if by having the planning director and the committee have that flexibility, you know, we could be here how many times for who knows what use could be coming down the road. Right now, today, it's, you know, park and rides. You know, who knows what the next thing is that's not on our list that's going to come before the, you know, the planning department. Are we going to be in discussions about, well, is that permitted or a conditional use and things, and, you know, continue building the list? Or are we going to give the administrative flexibility to staff on these, you know, things?
Are we talking about the motion to send it back to committee?
Regarding the motion. The motion is to refer this back to committee, and that's the direction we should be discussing right now.
Well, that's why I'm saying that I cannot support the motion, because I think what the initial is here is,
okay.
You know.
I get you.
Yeah.
Councilors Watson and Olson?
I guess I would be ready to vote on it as well. And I also, I don't have a problem with making the park and rides conditional uses. We don't really have those. It's something new for the city. And I would like to have a few of those, have conditional uses to see where it goes. I am also concerned with what we might get, you know, a 3 or 4 story parking garage, or someone who does parking but does something else on the side with the parking. And I until we're a little more comfortable, I wouldn't mind seeing conditional use for a while on those. So I'm actually would prefer that we finish the discussion tonight.
Councilperson Olson?
I'm going to pretty much echo what Kathy said. I like Greg's point of bringing up the, here we have a one-level parking, but all of a sudden we have a three-story, and they're going to claim that, well, this is the same as this. I mean, where does it end? That's something I didn't even think of, and I would make it conditional also. That's because they're not the same. Different impact.
Councilperson Ingram?
Can I withdraw my motion?
You can vote against your own motion.
You
can withdraw by not voting.
You have to have council consent to withdraw.
Yeah, general consent.
We're not doing general consent. I hate
no.
Okay.
Literally have to have council vote.
Okay, here's how we do that. Is there any objection from anyone from council if Councilperson Ingram withdraws his motion?
Oh.
Okay, see no objection, then it's withdrawn. Thank you. Okay, Councilperson Hansen?
The park and ride that's over at the on Labatty.
Mm-hmm.
Is that already an approved conditional use?
No.
Why is it operated?
It is a taxi and limousine service where the... As we understand it, the services are provided to not only the airport, but potentially other areas in the community as well. And those uses, limousine, taxi, are allowed through the zone.
And that big sign that says airport parking, $2 a day, is to be ignored?
It's been posted twice. Two different signs.
But I... Mm-hmm. So it's not airport parking, it's a taxi and limousine service. The point I'm getting at, it appears to me that it's already been approved.
It's operated.
As a taxi and limousine service.
It has not been approved as a park and ride.
As you clearly pointed out.
No, well, and you know, to the credit of the property owner, I don't think that he would be here if he had completed his... ambitions for the property. I think that he still wishes to do some further conversions and would need to know what direction the council wants to head in order to do that.
Well, the point I was going to make was it appears that staff, by permitting the operation as a parking lot for the airport, has already decided that the flexibility issue, that this should be within the flexibility issue.
Have you?
No, we have. This is a tough one. We have tried to work with the property owner as much as possible, and the property owner did point out some loopholes, I guess, with, that would allow him to get very close to his ultimate purpose of park and ride.
Which kind of goes back to what Greg was saying, is we're looking for somewhat of some clarity. Mm-hmm. Councilperson Olson?
I understand what you're saying, but anyone who makes that argument, as Mel pointed out, with a sign advertising parking, is not running a limousine service. He's running a limousine service and a parking. So, and I understand what Mel's trying to say, and I think I'm on the same thing, is we need to deal with it. We can't have somebody sit there and tell us this is what I'm doing when he has a sign saying absolutely opposite. So it has to be dealt with, and we just can't look the other way.
Which is what we're trying to do.
Okay.
Councilperson Goodrich?
Let me get my thing back over. I make a motion that we approve Agenda Bill 1308004.
Second.
As presented.
Any further discussion? Councilperson Olson?
I'll make it quick. I'm going to support it, with, even though I'm worried about your job in 3 years. But we can watch it.
Just to be clear, I will not fire you, Ray.
Just remember my cute little kids that came in here this morning. So if any of you in here in that position,
think of the children.
I'll be supporting it as well, and I had the same concerns as Councilmember Olson, but you got to trust people, and we can always change it down the road. It's not working out. So I'm in favor.
Mm-hmm. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, staff. That was hard work. Okay. A good one. Should be quick and easy. Resolution, Slater Road Extension, Cope Road.
Council, I'll try to make this as quick
Thank
as
you,
possible
Mr. Grant.
So we can rush this through. But Councilmember Goodrich requested these resolutions at the request of a private citizen related to two projects that I think our community feels are no-brainer projects. And what these resolutions basically simply do is make a position official from the City Council that you would like to see them happen. One is a full extension of Slater to the Guide Meridian. The other one is a connection of Cope Road within Ferndale city limits south to the Bellingham International Airport at Mitchell Way. For background, the port is working on an update to the airport master plan. They are considering that extension of Cope Road to Mitchell. There are some issues with right-of-way of WashDOT and some other stuff. It could be costly, but it is being considered. It's not a no. The Slater one, however, with the Whatcom County, not so much in support by their staff or at this time their council. It's it was on the six-year tip for the county about 9 years ago. They removed it due to some cost issues and disagreement they got from the public. However, I believe our jurisdiction feels that this would be a very important road to help with further our economic development future. The argument was made in committee that it appears Whatcom County is working to extend roads on for the benefit of Bellingham, and specifically for Bellingham and Costco. A lot of taxpayer money, as you can see on Bakerview, is going into the frontage improvements that will be where Costco would have otherwise been required to pay for them themselves. And so the argument was made that perhaps the county would consider a road that would benefit Ferndale and its economic future as well. So with that, we feel that these are very, very straightforward resolutions. They should be adopted, and I'll leave it at that.
Councilperson Watson?
I'm not opposed to us lobbying the county or the airport to ask for this. I guess I just want to make sure that we're doing it because it's something the city wants to do, not something a landowner wants to do. So I'm just curious if Public Works and the Community Development Director could speak to both the resolutions and just let us know if you're in favor of both those resolutions.
Okay, I'll go to Public Works Director first.
I kind of looked it over, and I know it's a plan that's been looked at.
Both roads.
In the past. Yeah, and so I don't have a problem with us submitting this request to the county. And right now, I think each year the county submits a letter to the city of Ferndale and asks us to review their six-year TIF and provide any comments. And these comments, we're supposed to have those in by August 23rd.
Okay.
So I felt this is appropriate time to submit a resolution like this to the county.
Okay.
And community development?
I also support it. I especially support the Cope Road extension to Slater Road. I think that's a no-brainer as far as Slater. My only hope would be that we make sure that it is the city of Ferndale and not another jurisdiction that's benefited.
Councilperson Goodrich, and then
I was going to comment on it, too. This, as being the on the Economic Development Commission and the past chairman of that before being on the Planning Commission and then now on council liaison to the now defunct Planning Economic Development Commission, I think this is something that's been talked about quite a while. It's not just just something that's kind of gotten new life again, and so that's why I had no hesitation of bringing this forward on behalf of the people that came to me, because it was something that was discussed once before, and like I said, now seems to be a good timing with what the port's doing with their comprehensive plan and also with the county's six-year TIP coming up. You know, so I thought it just, you know, good timing for it. And if anybody has any questions, the two gentlemen that approached me to bring this forward are here tonight that can answer questions as well.
Councilperson Mutchler and then Henson.
Brent, I was just going to ask you to make it, if you'd make the motion to adopt this.
Well,
what was that?
He was going to have Brent make a motion to adopt it.
Since you, you provided leadership here.
Then I will make a motion to adopt these two resolutions to the two different groups as presented.
Second.
Okay, Councilperson Hansen, did you still go?
I was going to make the motion.
Okay. So any further discussion? Okay. Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Did you get that, reporter? 7-0. Be a great lead article in the paper. Just thought I'd mention it. Okay, next up on the agenda, this is kind of sad, is we've had library people come and sit in our comfortable chair for hours upon hours, and I think if we book this next situation here, they won't come to council and hang around all night. Well, we're going to miss them.
Move for a pretty committee?
They're sure they'll miss you.
Wait until we decide that we're going to select the paint colors.
The Arts Commission job.
So I'm going to turn this over to our city administrator that's working hard on a project hardly anybody knows about.
Yes, this has been, I think, a long time coming by almost any estimation. A lot of work and a lot of dedicated folks. We did open the bids here a while back. We got three very good bids. One of them, obviously, was a low bid, and that was Faber Construction. And we are recommending that they you award the base bid along with, naturally, sales tax. But then there were some alternatives. And alternative number one is the landscaping. Alternative number three is the expanded parking lot, which would give us about 70 stalls. And then 3A, which will actually allow us to reconfigure a little bit of the city hall parking lot to provide access out on what would be 3rd Avenue. It would be
4th
Avenue. And so I guess with that, I'd just like to thank everyone who's worked so hard on this and recommend approval.
Discussion from council. Oh, hands up. Okay, I have Councilperson Ingram first, and then I'll go back in order.
I would like to move to accept and award the bid for the new library.
That second?
Second.
Okay, second by Councilperson Hansen. Any further discussion? Okay, Councilperson Goodrich, then Mutchler.
The alternative for the additional parking, is that to pave the gravel lot and incorporate that into that?
Yes. The parking originally was just around the library. It had about 30 or 35 stalls. And then there was the alternative that expanded that to about 70. And then there was 3A in here, which is then the parking lot over behind City Hall. So, yes, that bid. Also, I should add, too, that the base bid of all those would be $4,508,525. That's sales tax and the alternates. And a contingency of $250,000 for a total of $4,758,525. That's what we're recommending.
And my second question is to our treasurer, when would we need to do our bond?
Great question. I was going to comment after the vote, but by approving this bid tonight, we obviously need to raise the bond money. And soon I'll be bringing back the bond ordinance. We've chosen a lowest cost financial institution to handle those two bonds issues. Cashmere Valley Bank, the second position was a Key Bank, a little bit more expensive interest rate wise. And thirdly, Banner Bank, our business banker, was out of the running, too high interest rate wise. So we're looking at a 10-year term for those two. One is a voter property tax, 10-year, $550,000. The other one was a 10-year council manic, $1,050,000. So we'll be bringing an ordinance to you. We've chosen our bond counsel, Foster Pepper, Nancy Nurse. She's been before this body before, and we'll be bringing that very soon with bond proceeds in October.
Councilperson Mutchler?
So this library will be paid off in 10 years.
Correct.
That is awesome. And anything that we're not able to do because of finances, all the alternatives we wanted covered.
Yeah, no. We were very, very pleased that the bishop
should probably hold that discussion to the next issue. One thing that's missing.
But no, we were very pleased, and everything that was in there, I think, has been worked out fairly well. It incorporates not only the desires of the library itself, but it also then helps us create even more parking and kind of incorporates the library into the city hall.
Councilperson Ingram, Olson, and then Zimmerman.
Well, I just wanted to ask a question, because I don't know whether we can do this or not, but when it comes down to doing the alarm system for the new library, can we disqualify a certain alarm company that we're still having issues with at Pioneer Park and the police station due to past performance?
Duly noted by our construction manager. Councilperson Olson?
I have a real issue with, here we are, our next thing is how broke we are, but spending $155,000 on landscaping. That's just a phenomenal amount for trees and shrubs. I think it's rather crafty to get $30,000 for us to pave City Hall parking, yet charge it off to the library. We passed this, or the voters passed this tax, property tax increase, to the tune of what, Mark, around $500,000?
$550,000.
If we have the library money at $4.4 million and $550,000, we're just shy of $5 million when all we need is $47 or $4.7 something. What are we going to do with all that extra money that we're charging all the taxpayers on housing?
City Administrator?
Yeah, this bid is for the building and the parking lots, but there is additional costs over and above that. There's the cost of the permits. We have the buffer plantings that we have to do for the marsh. We have our construction manager, and there's just a lot of other costs: the gas service, the electric service. It's amazing all the little things that start adding up. As far as the
and they're not in here,
right?
No,
because this is just Faber. Faber is just going to be building the building in the parking lot. But then we've got to bring gas there. We need to bring electricity there.
Who's doing that?
We are. These are the project costs over and above the pure construction costs. Also, I should say too that with the parking lot, it was important for us not to have everyone going out on Main Street. We wanted to have a second entrance over on 4th. And if you remember, we were talking with the donor whether his monies could be used for the extra parking off-site, and they were not comfortable with that. So some of this, in fact, 3A, the City Hall parking lot, that amount we're not going to be able to go to the donor's money for. That's something that's going to need to come out of our monies, either the Councilmatic bond or the voter-approved bond. There may be some monies left over when this is over. Now, the issue is we're going to be requesting reimbursement from the foundation. So the foundation has more money than we do. I mean, together we have the monies that you talked about. The foundation is actually going to be holding more monies than we're going to be holding. So we're going to be running out of our monies before they run out of their monies. So it is a very good chance that the monies that are left over will be foundation money, not City of Ferndale bond money. But that's something for the community foundation, I think,
That's very misleading. I mean, we were told that there was $4.4 million available, not that, and at that point, once we committed to this, that should be turned over, and we should have to justify using every dollar. But it shouldn't be held by somebody else in order, if we're the ones that are paying on the hook for the bills.
Yeah, now if you remember, there we got both of those million-dollar donors, and we actually got a very late $500,000 donor. And if you take that out of the equation, which only happened a month or two ago, we would be pretty much right on the bubble for having enough money. It's conceivable, and we need to have these, not knowing what the bids were, we couldn't really have this conversation with the foundation, and for that matter, you and the library folks. But there's the possibility that should the foundation or the library want to upgrade some of the furnishings and fixtures that the city's not responsible for. We build the building, and the library is responsible for putting the shelving and the desks and the books and all the stuff inside the building.
But that sounds like that you're giving them, in turn, a slush fund at our expense of the overage of what we've raised.
Well, again, we have extra money because the foundation raised extra money, especially that last $500,000.
Is this above the 4.4?
No, this is included in all
the notes. That's the figure that I got from him that was available towards this. So I'm not sure where this sounds like another one of those three-card money, our accountant speeches. No insult intended, sir. I never heard one from you.
Yeah.
All these different funds are being used different ways. I'm not going to support.
It's going to be for sure. I mean, we're going to be using all of our bond monies, both the councilmatic bond monies as well as the voted bond monies, to build a library. We don't have enough money just in those two sources to build a library. So then we're going to be using the foundation money that they raised along with the donors' matches to build the library. Once the library is built, if there's money left over, in my mind, it's the foundation's money that is left over, not the city's money. Because lacking the foundation, we didn't have enough to do this.
We specifically authorized, because I did it,
mm-hmm.
We specifically authorized that property tax increase because we were short.
Right.
So now all of a sudden we're not short. So we shouldn't be even touching that, if that's the case.
Well,
that was solely to help them reach their goal that they did not meet.
Yeah, if not for the efforts of the foundation, especially the last-minute, if you will, efforts of the foundation, this would be a very, very tight budget, and we would probably be talking about not doing certain things rather than...
Like the parking lots.
Like the parking lots, and perhaps, you know, scaling back on the landscaping, which we got a very good bid on. But when we were talking about the councilmatic bond, the second million-dollar donor didn't exist, neither did the $500,000 donor. We went to the voters for the vote. I know the $500,000 donor didn't exist, and maybe even the second one didn't exist at that point. If not for the extraordinary efforts of the foundation, we wouldn't be building a library. I guess the alternative would be that if they were simply to give us all their money, which would make things much easier from an accounting standpoint, I guess we would then take the position that if there's money left over, it's ours to figure out how to spend, and we would probably need to have, we could possibly have some conflict between the foundation and the city if we used all their money.
We could adjust what we're charging the property taxes increases.
If we knew of all the monies that were going to be available, if we could turn the clock back and say we knew we had $2 million donors and we knew we had a $500,000 donor and we knew that the foundation and the library folks were out there selling their books, and if we knew, we just didn't know.
But that's what we heard, because I just got it from Sam. How much is available? It was 4.4, it changed. So how can we say we didn't know when we do know?
Well, we know now, but we didn't know when we asked you for the councilmatic, and we didn't know when we asked the voters.
That's deceptive to me. If I was not on the councilmatic, on the voters jacking up their own property taxes, they did that in order to save this thing, and all of a sudden they got more than what they needed, and yet we're taking more.
Well,
wow.
we're going to spend all of our councilmatic, we're going to spend all of our voter approval.
Oh, I have no doubt you're going to spend
for the library.
Yeah.
And thankfully, we had an extraordinary fundraising effort by the foundation. If we have money left over, in my mind, it's the foundation's money that's left over. It's not the city taxpayers' money.
It's the library project's money.
Yeah.
It's Councilperson Ingram Watson Hansen.
I don't want to drag this out. But I think that what Keith's concern is, if we got all of the money that the foundation raised for this project and our councilmatic bond, and it paid for everything, do we have to issue the $550 bond, or could we just ignore it and tell voters, thanks, I'm glad you gave it to us, but we don't need it, so we're not going to raise your property taxes? Because I think that's where Keith's coming from.
Exactly where Keith's coming from.
And, you know, I can understand that, but is it legal to do that?
If I could answer that, we will lose approximately $550,000 that was donated to us because the voter-approved bond was matched by an anonymous donor.
Yes.
Pulling if you no longer do the bonds, now we've lost $1,100,000 for this project and it won't go forward.
He only gave us the extra $500,000 because the voters approved it. And then
that's
an additional.
I've ever heard of that.
Me too.
No, that was the whole plan from the beginning.
I respectfully disagree with you, Sam, because that is the very first time I've ever heard that $500,000 donor gave that money strictly because the voters said yes.
I think it's because the $500,000 that pledge didn't exist until the voters, after the voters approved the bond.
Two different people.
Then this other person came up and said, you know what? The voters spoke, and I'm going to speak with my money, and I'm going to match it.
This is two different ones.
Two different people.
There was a donor that
first
had already.
I've ever heard about.
If I could clarify really quick, there was a donor that had already pledged a certain amount of money to us, and it was a matching program. We came to you and asked for a bond and said, through that, if the voters were to approve this, if you put it on the ballot, it will be matched by this person. I included that in a public fact sheet.
That's the second million.
Correct. And I included that in a fact sheet that went out publicly, and I emailed it out to council. I mean, this is, I put it out publicly. We've known that the whole time, and I'm happy to send it to you again.
But after that $500,000 of matching, another $500,000 came in because someone said, look what the voters did. And so the $500,000 that the voters gave us turned into $1.5 million.
Right. So all we have two separate, is that if the bonds aren't sold, we lose a match.
Yes, because that match only came because the donor said that if you can get the voters to give the $500,000, I'll match a $500,000. And they did. And there's always the chance that the other person who was happy would make that go away too. Because everyone has done this based on the fact that the voters of Ferndale want a library.
A confusing process.
And quite frankly,
moving on. Councilperson Zimmerman, I think we're okay on this subject.
Mr. Mayor, in the big scheme of things, the grand scheme, what happens to the pizza annex
going to burn it down.
Another day, another story.
Well,
Councilperson Hansen? Well, I don't know.
Is there anyone that knows what happened? I mean,
no,
it's just, okay. Someone asked me, I said, you know, I don't know, but I know who knows.
It's a dictatorship on this one. Councilperson Hansen?
He'd have to kill you.
It would seem to me that dollars that were raised by the foundation for the purpose of the Ferndale Library, that it would be dishonest on the foundation's part to spend those on anything but the Ferndale Library. So if there are dollars left over, I, as one of the donors, will demand that the foundation find a way to spend that on the library, even if it's putting in gold fixtures in the bathrooms. In other words, if there's $300,000 left over, one of two things needs to happen. It either gets spent on the Ferndale Library in some fashion, or proportionately it is returned to the donors who thought their money was going to the library. And I'm not talking about these $1 million guys. I wasn't one of those, incidentally. I'm talking about the little guys that put up $500 and $1,000 and that sort of thing along the way that did it for the library. And
I was going to say, to be honest,
not do that.
Now, this is a good problem to have. So I'm just in context here. Also, again, I've not had a chance because up until just recently when we opened the bids, my fear was we weren't going to have enough money. So I've not had the opportunity, or I guess the optimism to approach the foundation and say, what if we have extra money? It could be that your concerns are extremely valid, they share them, there's no problem, but I don't know. I don't want you to think that I've had these discussions and we've decided that the foundation gets to keep any extra money and spend it wherever they want. It's a discussion we need to have, and as the project goes forward, we're going to need to watch our costs, because the worst thing in my mind is to start a project with some folks worrying about how to spend money because they'll figure out how to do it. So I want to keep a close fiscal scrutiny on this. I would love to have money left over. I would love to have a great outcome for that money. But I don't want to have a race to try to figure out how to spend any extra monies in advance of us actually deciding on need and having that conversation with the foundation and eventually the citizens and the plethora of donors that came large and small.
Councilperson Watson and then Olson.
I will be supporting the motion. I think we all remember there's a motion out there. I think we got a good price on the bid. I'm very excited by the price of the pretty much the landscaping. I know it's a lot of money, but that includes irrigation and everything for the whole project. And also I'm very excited that we're going to get to do the parking lots, because that was a huge issue. What we've learned at Pioneer Pavilion is, you know, if you build it, they will come, but they do need to park. And I'm very excited that we'll be able to get those extra parking spaces for a very good price. And also, to kind of, we're talking about maybe changing the way 4th Avenue so you can come and go, not just having it one way. We'll be able to have the money to do that now, so people won't be going out Main Street.
It should be noted, you know, before you go on, if there's money left over, there is a need for more meeting space. And there is a building available that could be done for more meeting space.
No.
I want to mention that. Councilperson Olson?
In your dreams.
Something Greg said, it just sticks in my craw. If Sam put something out about this, which I don't remember like Paul, but then again, I forget stuff every day. And we knew we had, with the voted money, we knew we had enough to meet the engineer or the architect's amount, and then all of a sudden we got another million. How could you not think we're going to have enough money to build?
Half a million.
You just said earlier, one gave another half, and then that other donor said, I'll give another million, half a million. So we got like half a million.
But none of this happened before the voters voted.
What?
That only because the voters voted yes did you get the extra money. If we hadn't put that forward, we wouldn't have gotten it.
The 500.
But we had, with what the voters voted on, we had enough to do it. And now
Until we opened the bids, we
didn't know.
I mean,
we opened
literally
the
until
the architect's amount, that's what we were shooting for, correct?
Yes, we have an architect's estimate, but
I'm real good at breaking down hydrogen and water, and if we have to go there, I guess I can't. But
sure,
we
go boom if he does that.
We had the money. We had the money, and now all of a sudden we have two more $500,000 donations. So
one.
The other one had already been made, and it was matching money available.
Yep, and I just emailed everyone the fact sheet.
Never mind. Councilperson Mutchell.
Anyway, we're going to build this.
Put your hand up, I think.
Well, I'm utterly amazed we're building a library. And I agree with Greg's narrative, and I appreciate that. I did have one question in committee. There is $900,000 plus that the foundation has not collected yet, right?
That is not correct.
Pardon?
That's not correct, actually.
Okay. It was listed as not collected.
That's a receivable question.
Yes, I am. I talked to the Whatcom Community Foundation, and they have $71,000 in pledges receivable, of which they only expect to have problem collecting perhaps $2,500, and they've talked to that donor, and they will have some kind of a plan for them. And that's excluding the $250,000 from the Norcliffe. And that's something that, you know, once, if we do approve this motion, we need to let Norcliffe know that we have put out the bid. The bid has been approved, and so they will give us our $250,000. Yeah, they haven't received it from Norcliffe because Norcliffe won't give it to us until.
Can I clarify? Does the foundation need to notify them of that? It was their award.
That was my question too, but Maury is out of town, so I'm going to call Pamela.
And we can do it.
Say again, of the $95,000 uncollected.
They said there's According to Noriankum, there's only 71,000
is still out there, accounts
still
receivable.
Out there, that they have yet to receive. But they have talked to all those donors, and they expect to receive it very soon.
Right.
And the only person who's balked is someone who owes $2,500.
That's pretty good. Okay.
There was one more question from committee related to whether there was 500,000 grants, I believe, out there, or some such.
Not curb.
I can't recall, but there was something 500,000, and the question was whether or not that was the money that was going to be available for the project, or if the community foundation was going to take the 1-2% administrative fee to reduce that.
They do take a 3% administrative fee.
So the question was whether or not what was on the sheet was actually what we're going to get and what we have to spend.
It wasn't curb was to the city.
Yeah. The sheet that we're referring to, this was a sheet that actually I think was last updated in June, and we've sent it off to the foundation to update it. In fact, on this sheet we had $958,000 worth of pledges receivable, which has now been turned into a little more than $70,000. My understanding, again, because the numbers from the foundation were given to me by the foundation, it's my understanding that these numbers in here are actual dollars available. So they're kind of net of any.
But they won't take 3% out of the curb, because curb will come directly.
The curb grant is ours.
No, it was another cost that they had identified related to their funding.
We have on the sheet here additional donor funds of $500,000. That might be
additional
what
donor funds.
Okay.
It would help the finance committee.
Are you ready for a vote? Okay, we're ready for a vote. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Motion carries. 6-1.
Let's just clap.
I don't know how many hours we discussed this, but I'm with you. This is like, wow.
It's only 6 years.
Seven.
You still can come back and sit in our uncomfortable chairs. You're always welcome. Okay, next item on the agenda.
Thank you, council members. I'm going to, in the interest of time, I probably should speak in my very fast voice, but I'm going to try to slow down for you to speak about this topic. Before you tonight is a proposal from staff and the Ferndale Arts Commission related to creating a public art fund and public art program. This proposal amends the section of city code that created the Arts Commission, and I think that's something that I want to stress is that the city council and this city has created a arts commission to, you know, in your stead, be the proponent of art in this community for a variety of reasons, and that mission is put in your code. The public art fund and public art program would be funded with two main options directly from the city, and this is what has been the major issue. One is a per capita fee of $2 per person in the city of Ferndale, based on, obviously, the 10-year census, and then annually the State Office of Financial Management's population projection updates. The other aspect is a 1% from any capital project exceeding $75,000 would be placed in the public art fund. Another aspect of this proposal that is different than the way our budget normally works is that any funding, any revenue that is in the public art fund would roll over year to year. It would remain there. It would be protected. That's not generally how our budget works. Every year you update that budget. You know, it's a zero slate. Part of that is because I think there was, well, one, this is how it's done in other cities, and two, because I think frequently cities look to funds like this when there are budget issues. That leads me to another aspect of this. As the person that's hired by the mayor and charged by all of you to help promote this city, to explain to other to elsewhere what Ferndale is about, sometimes it is difficult to explain what the identity of this community is, especially and particularly related to economic development. It's very easy for me to look at the COGS related to all of the discounts that we have provided to development. It's very easy to do that. It's more difficult to discuss quality of life and the aesthetics of this community. And I fervently believe, as a staff member who helps represent the Arts Commission, that that's another crucial cog in the engine that is economic development. It's difficult. I come from a community, Coraline, Idaho, that is extremely conservative, and they have one of the most robust tourism economies in the Pacific Northwest for a city of their size. And it's largely related to art. They have immense art, public art festivals in that city. They have a large amount of public art picked by and recommended by their Arts Commission and approved by their city council. So this is something that our Arts Commission is kind of, they took baby steps when they were created to do one project, and then the recession happened, and they kind of lost their way a little bit, and I think part of it was the money dried up, it was gone. So what art can they recommend? So they went in another direction. They used passion that, you know, for art to create a, you know, Art in the Park Festival, to promote with the high school students the Sidewalk Chalk Festival in the Riverwalk, to support Louisa House with programming there, both musical arts and other arts. They've done a lot with very little, pretty much nothing, well, nothing from the city, other than a hotel motel tax grant, which doesn't come out of the general fund and was approved, you know, promoted by the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee. They've done a lot, and the next step, I believe their view would be, is they're looking for a commitment from the city to further promote art in the community. I've made it very clear to them, and I've been very blunt with them, that this is a very tough year to make a request like this for a variety of reasons. When they first brought this to me and asked me to write this ordinance, we were looking at a budget deficit of $250,000 for the upcoming year, and I let them know that. I let them know that this request seems very unlikely. Since then, I don't mean to steal your thunder, Mark, for future budget discussions, but we're looking at about $43,000 now, and that includes some accounting that are so far as just a financial exercise related to a property tax increase and some other maneuvers, you know, to help balance our budget. So we're still facing a big thing. But in my mind, it never hurts to start this discussion. And I honestly think that this should be a discussion. If it's not funded now, this should be something that we discuss every year. It's honestly crucial for the marketing of the city, for our economic development future, for our current community's quality of life. I think this is something that's very important. And so I hope that the Arts Commission will speak a little bit about this issue really quick, and then you can discuss it. One other aspect, however, if I was a journalist for the Bellingham Herald, I would have written this article in the exact same way. But Ralph Schwartz of the Herald, I don't mean to pick on him because I'm not, but he did a very good job of explaining that you have some very tough decisions this budget cycle related to organizational grants, which is your next topic, and public art. To me, obviously you have to balance everything related to this budget. So for you, it is considering both. But I do want to mention that the Ferndale Arts Commission is a public body within the city of Ferndale. And so it's not an outside entity seeking funding from you. It's an entity that's part of this, you know, this city, seeking funding to further promote this city. So it's a little bit different, but I absolutely, totally 100% agree that you have tough decisions ahead of you this year related to all of these issues. And I'm not saying that one is better than the other, just that we have two separate issues tonight that we're going to discuss, and obviously you're going to consider them at the same time probably, but just want to leave it at that.
Especially my councilperson Watson, and Goodrich, and then Mutchler, and then Hansen.
Just a question for staff, perhaps the finance director. I'm trying to understand. So this can only come from general fund. We can't use any other funds for this. I mean, so any of the money, the $2 per person, would have to somehow come from the general fund, because we move money.
Correct.
Okay. So that's the bottom line.
Exit.
And the other aspect is for capital projects, if you get an outside funding agency, they're not obviously going to be able to commit 1% to a capital project for the art fund.
Yeah.
So then now the city council and the city staff will have to find 1% somewhere else to place in this fund if that was part of it. Yeah.
So there's no other options for other funds. Okay.
Councilperson Goodrich?
I thought it was interesting in the presentation you talked about an identity for Ferndale, and it's hard to present. The guy back there will probably remember was about 6 years ago or more that the Economic Development Commission talked about branding of the city and coming up with a brand so we could market the city. And the Economic Development Commission came to the city and asked for some funds to help with this, and we were told no money. The EDC has come several times to the council and asked for funds, and they were told no money. So, to me, being an ex-EDC person and seeing what's kind of happened with that group because of the council saying no money, we have no EDC. And because the group says, why do we need to get together if we can't do anything, really? So I personally don't buy into the argument, and I personally cannot support this ordinance.
Staff response?
For clarification, I wasn't a staff member when the EDC was initially created, but I believe you have staff now that works very aggressively to promote economic development in the city. All due respect, Yori has slashed almost every fee we have around here to promote economic development, and then on my side, I think we've done a really good job of promoting economic development in the city. What I'm saying is I feel like we can further enhance economic development with this additional element, but we're very well known already for what we've done on the community development side, I believe. I'm paid to help brand the city. I can do it. But what I'm saying is I can brand it. It's just there's certain aspects of the story that I can't tell because they're lacking, I guess is what I'm saying.
Councilperson Mutchler, Hansen, and then back to Zimmerman.
A minor point of disclosure, I get a nice check every year from the Pacific Arts Foundation, which gets money indirectly from Blaine Hotel Motel, at least when Sam Young was open. My question, does the state limit how much we can tax hotel motel?
Yes.
Okay. Councilperson Hansen?
I'm bothered by the fact that it's on the agenda tonight when we have the budget yet to go. There's a whole bunch of things that bother me about it that need to get worked out in committees and that kind of stuff. One of the things that bothers me about it is if we do a sewer project for $5 million, Janice, and we're doing that out of our sewer funds, can you take the art money out of that $5 million? So if we pass that ordinance, we would have to come up with $50,000 out of the general fund because you have dedicated any capital project, 1% will go towards art. So since you can't take it out of the sewer fund, you'd have to come out of the general fund. So you're not talking about $2 per person. You're talking about a whole bunch more money when you're talking about dedicated
funds. It's both funds.
Yeah, the
one before.
Back to the premature issue. The next item on the agenda probably should have come first because one of the things we're going to be talking about is not funding traditional or possibly not funding or cutting back on funding of some of the traditional affirmed and disadvantaged funding, i.e. food bank, senior citizens, and so forth. And frankly, I could not support adding a whole bunch of funding the same time that we're trying to balance a budget, well over 40-some thousand in the red, because this budget with 40-some thousand assumes that we're going to pass a 3% property tax. It assumes that we're going to make an exchange
of utility taxes
for, you know what that
utility rates.
Right? Utility rates versus utility taxes. And those are yet to be decided. And so we could still be in a lot bigger budget deficit. That's one of the reasons I say this is premature. It would be nice to have that money to count on. But we don't have the money to count on. How can we give it away?
Quickly.
Just to clarify, I guess my intent was not, I did not assume this was going to be approved tonight. I was hoping to start a conversation with you. And it was requested to be placed on this agenda tonight because I believe we will have a full slate of the full council here tonight so that everyone got an introduction to this item. Because I believe at least Councilmember Mutcher is going to be gone from the next meeting, and I think Councilmember Watson may be not in attendance at one of those meetings.
Coming up soon. Yeah.
So I wanted to introduce the topic tonight that everyone was aware of it.
Councilperson Zimmerman.
Well, I'm very supportive of this, and Mel, it'll always be something. You know, for the last 20 years, you know, we've been missing something. I think this certainly fills the niche, and there's a lot of large construction projects. When we're doing them, we can do just 1% more to make them look great. So I would make a motion to support this. I think it's high time that we have it. It adds on great emotion, economical impact. There's a lot of things that you can do, and it comes into play. And I just think we need to have an independent fund that's away from people that want to take it away for road funds or sewer funds or all this other shortage that we will always come up with. Like the mayor said earlier, boy, this community has committed a lot of money to sports, you know, for all the facilities that we have. I think it's really important that we support whole brain thinking and creativity. And again, these are activities that will bring money to town. So in a way, Brent, it is economic development. But it's investing in our community in a positive visual way. So I would support it, and I would make a motion that we accept Agenda Bill 1308007.
Listening. Okay, motion appears to die for lack of a second. Councilor Burton Watson, you're next up.
I am a liaison to the Arts Commission. I can't accept the 1% of the capital projects just because I don't think we'd ever be able to afford it. What I would like to do is I'd like to make a motion to return this to the Finance Committee and have that committee bring it forward to us sometime in the June time frame of 2014.
Second. Okay, this motion and a second. Further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries with Councilperson Zimmerman voting no. Okay, and
Mr. Ingram abstained.
Councilperson Ingram abstained. Okay, next up is... okay.
I was told I would have 3 minutes. Am I guaranteed that 3 minutes?
Not after Councilperson Watson's motion. She stopped.
Because I wasn't sure what's going on since
she ended discussion. Sorry.
Since you spoke, I thought that perhaps Carla wasn't going to speak.
Ended discussion.
I was told I'd be able to speak before this began. I'm here to speak. What can we do to allow me speaking time?
Council,
make a motion to
the council and see if the council will allow her the 3 minutes. I would be in favor of listening to the 3 minutes.
Okay,
recognizing the decision's already been made to delay this.
That.
We could reconsider that, but that's a parliamentary move.
Approval. Okay, go ahead. 3 minutes.
Thank you very much.
Go for it.
Okay. City Council has already been advised of the multiple programs the Ferndale Arts Commission has sponsored. We have partnered with many local merchants to promote businesses and art. Art means business. City Council and the Ferndale Arts Commission know the intangible benefits of public art. We know it is fundamental to our humanity. We know public art inspires and ennobles us. We know public art shapes the distinct identity of a city. We know public art brings diversity together in community. However, these are considered soft benefits, especially in hard economic times. The Ferndale Arts Commission wants you to know, 1, art creates jobs. In 2011, art supported over 3,000 jobs in Whatcom County. 2, the arts industry is clean and sustainable. 3, public art creates property value, which generates tax revenues. With funding, the Ferndale Arts Commission could expand upon the annual events that we already sponsor, such as Art in the Park, which will be held this year, September 14th and 15th, in Pioneer Park. Also, Poem in Your Pocket Day, Free First Photo Project, and the Louisa House. We could offer classes at our community center in drama, puppetry, sculpture, photography, writing, on and on, taught by professional artists. Research shows art education improves elementary and secondary student intelligence, grades, and performance on standardized tests. And for students of disadvantaged economic status, art education improves educational attachment and the likelihood of attending post-secondary institutions. We could provide a program similar to that offered by Coeur d'Alene, which is called Art on the Edge, where persons of disadvantaged economic backgrounds are offered free art classes accompanied by a nutritious, delicious meal prepared by local chefs. We could do more. We could do so much more if we had some money. We ask that you regard the funding of public art as a responsible investment in with public monies with the expectation of sound social and economic returns of that investment. Thank you.
Perfect timing at 3 seconds, not bad. Okay, so we voted to move this to committee.
Yes.
The next one, in the interest of time, though, I mean, are you, because we, I don't know if we're looking at a giant discussion on the service.
It's a giant discussion.
I think maybe the question before is, should you allow the applications?
Correct. The question, I was going to advertise these from August 1st to November 1st. That's a very long process. It's longer than what we do for hotel motel, which is only 30 days. I've held off because currently the administration's proposal for this funding is zero. So I need to know from the council if I should put in the effort to advertise these and if the organizations should put in the effort to fill them out if they're just going to be told no.
Councilperson Hansen was first.
Well, I thought about this today quite a bit and thought, how do we do this without going full bore? The way you do it is we know that we're going to get applications from the food bank and the seniors and the ones that were funded last year.
Yeah.
We still have those applications from last year on file, do we not?
Correct.
And we could, a simple phone call would update those applications. What I'm thinking is allow any application, I wouldn't do a full-blown advertisement, but at least accept applications from any new.
Don't accept any new?
No, accept new ones only, and that the ones that have already applied are on file.
Just ask them, basically you would like me to ask them how much money they'd like from us for next year.
And save.
And then
save
the new ones they would apply.
So right. So if they want to update, they can, but we would go on last year's application?
That's basically the idea.
Oh, I see.
Knowing full well, you know, I think they all should be informed that right now it's a zero budget item. We will be talking about that in the future. We haven't made the decision that it's going to be zero.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're going to have to come up with money somehow, and it may include some cutbacks, and likely not going to include any increases, but that's a decision yet to be made.
Okay. Councilperson Watson?
I guess a clarification. So if no one, if they didn't submit last year, you want them to go ahead and submit this year? Because you said no new. You said you're going to take new ones.
No,
he said the ones we gave money to last year would not have to submit the detailed application. We would ask them if they would like to update it. Other than that, we know the amount we gave them last year.
But what about someone who was thinking about applying but didn't apply last year?
Then they would apply. Would I accept applications from the organizations that were not that applied but were not awarded money?
Yeah.
I assume so.
Yeah.
As part of the new.
Because they're still on file. I guess these forms take so much work, and we have.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up because I argued with you last year. I thought it was you spent all that time.
Them.
All those organizations did all that time, and then you did the exact same amount as the year before. It is not. It was not a very lean process, but you all thought it was a great idea.
You're not the king, baby.
That's why I came up with what I came up with. You don't have to do it again.
I don't think if last year we had some money. This year, we probably don't have the money. I just think it's cruel to have people spend the many hours. I want that information before we give it to them. So I want them to fill out the application. But if you have no money, why are you going to ask people to go get all their IRS forms?
I suppose the question is, do we feel like we should continue with an application process, or should the council should the administration simply find out what they would like and then should the council have a discussion at a workshop or study session about whether or not you're going
to
fund it?
Well, I don't want to kill the application right here in this very second. Because we went through a lot of trouble to get that application process in.
Well,
I don't want to just kill it because... Nice try, though.
I went through the trouble, but...
Oh, why?
I don't have to keep doing it.
Well,
I mean,
lots of people
and who got a pay raise?
You. Okay,
mine to me.
I'm not whining, I'm just saying.
I say we move ahead with it. You know, I don't see it as a zero-based item. You know, I fought for a lot of the stuff for last year.
I'm well, you saw me at the arts. Okay. I put my values in different areas versus the assumptive things that I feel are coming this way, and I'll be tougher than ever on this year.
So, Mr. Hansen, you want to go as a form of motion, or do you want to make a motion?
No, I'll agree that we accept last year's, documentation because I don't see anything major, and open it up for any other group that want to come in.
And I'll make that in the form of a motion, and I'm going to actually change a bit of it, and I'll change it if you think I should. I think even those groups that did not receive funding last year, we still have those applications. We don't need them to document again. All they need to do is refresh.
I'll second that.
And that if someone did not make an application last year, yes, if you want money, you need to go through that formal application. I don't think we need to go out and be a heavy advertiser of this. If they don't know yet,
All right.
Does that make sense?
Yep. Well, it doesn't seem. I don't feel comfortable with that, but I understand what you're saying.
So there's a motion and a second.
We have a comment from the audience.
Okay, are we recognizing the audience?
I
was a council member who wrote the resolution that made this mess, I guess, really. I think fundamentally what I was just looking for was that we would fund everything else first, our police department, our fire department, and that this would have the right perspective of coming when there are things left over. What I do wish is some kind of communication to all the nonprofits that there's not much of anything, that they should be planning their budget next year, perhaps likely assuming they won't receive anything from the city. They might. We've seen rabbits out of hats before, but I think there needs to be some kind of communication. There could well be nothing when all is said and done. And I believe, Mr. Peterson, your budget of $43,000, is that including a 3% utility tax increase, 3.5%, 3%, something like that?
There's a lot of magical thinking there.
To when are you referring? Which utility tax?
The mayor, budget where we're 43 short. Does that budget include
dictatorship extension?
The utility, our utility is going up 3%.
Already had one.
You wasted it at 8:30.
No, this is my 30.
I get to do it my way.
That budget worksheet assumes a general increase in utility taxes of 3%.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, there's a motion on the floor to vote to. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Okay, motion carries.
Thank you.
All right, mayor reports. Street festival this weekend, Mud to Sud. It's going to be busy in Ferndale. Tell your friends that they really should come eat a hot dog. It's kind of a city rule. What? Still looking for volunteers. Still eat a hot dog. Mayor will be out of town Tuesday evening and Wednesday for a continuing education class related to my plumbing license.
Tomorrow and the next day?
No, next Tuesday night and then all day Wednesday, so I'll miss committees. Okay?
Who's your pro tem?
Mayor pro tem is Councilperson Hansen. Okay, September 7th, put it on your schedule. That's the golden shovel opportunity for the library. We'll discuss other stuff later. So that's it for mayor reports, council reports.
Mr. Mayor, I believe I talked with the Nooksack Loop people, and sometime in September they're having a dedication of a section of trail.
Well, you know, Lloyd, that's the trail. It's the new trail from Hovander to Neubauer Pond, and it's like, that's got to be the quickest trail I've ever seen because I drive by and go,
I know.
Where are they starting on that? It's September 21st.
They're telling me about this. I'm going, wow, that's wonderful.
They're really
going
to build it then?
I've
been waiting.
Well, it's going to have to be the quickest trail in the world.
They're going to cut ribbons, and I thought you guys are, you'll be there kissing babies.
I drive by every day. It's like, when is that starting?
Yeah. They said, oh, yeah, it's coming.
I know. It's weird. I don't know.
Okay.
Okay. Further council reports? Seeing none?
None.
Okay. Finance director?
Nothing.
City Administrator.
Nothing.
Oh.
So September 3rd, how many council members are not here? That's your next council meeting? One, two, two.
Three.
Three of them?
Are you gone?
I think I'll be here the 3rd. It's the 16th. I'm gone.
Okay. Do we want to postpone then the discussion of the essential public facilities, the hearing?
Yes.
Okay, so that will be the second meeting in September.
I won't be here, but I think there's two, but only two for the...
with a...
Well, two on both times, so maybe I just go for it.
So we're trying to get it through. So who's gone on the...
Let's do a little vote counting.
I'll be gone.
Jail.
You'll be gone the next meeting?
I'll be gone.
Okay, let's just go for it. Okay, fine. Moving on. You don't have anything else, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay, good. Clerk?
Go Hawks.
Public Works?
Nothing.
Please. Okay, great. Don't leave real quick. Okay.
Move to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor, second by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, perfect.